a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. I'd like to call to order the Executive Board. Secretary, will please call the roll.
Senators Abdallah, Allers,
here.
Gray,
here.
Mayor Nelson, Teason, Representative Bird,
here.
Cronin,
here.
Krebs,
here.
Lucas, Putnam,
here.
Rabe,
here.
Tiedemann,
here.
Turbeville,
here.
Chair
Hunt. Here. We have a quorum present. Good morning to our listening audience and to those of you that are present here this morning. You have the agenda before you. Are there any changes or any additions? If not, it will stand approved. With that, we're going to move. We had one of our members from the e-board resign, and we will look at the election of an executive board member, and I will defer to Mr. Fry for discussion.
The South Dakota Code provides for the replacement of a member of the executive board. The statute is SDCL 2-9-2, and it states that the members of the chamber, the current members of the board that remain on the board of the chamber of the resigning member, will vote for a replacement. And since the resigning member is Senator Maher, then the senators that are on the executive board will vote on a replacement member. And this is a minority member, or a member from the minority side of the House, or the Senate, and that, of course, is Senator Gary Hansen. And he has been put forth by Senator Heideprim as their Senate representative, or one of their Senate representatives, to this board. But the other senators on the board will have to vote on that. And so, Madam Chairman, yes, at this point, we would accept nominations in addition to if you wanted to, or we will simply vote on whether Senator Hansen.
Yes. Excuse me. Now, what does that involve if a cell phone rings? Lunch? I'm sorry, Mr. Fry. I just couldn't let that one go by.
Yes, absolutely. There are penalties for leaving your cell phone on. I better check mine. But this, whatever the chair would like to do, since Senator Hansen's name has been placed in nomination, he's automatic by the party which he represents. He's in. And if you want to take nominations for anybody else, but generally, otherwise, we could go simply to voting on Senator Hansen.
All right, Senator Abdallah. It's been moved by Senator Abdallah, seconded by Senator Miles, that nomination cease. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried.
I will hand out this will be by secret ballot, Madam Chair, and so I will hand out a sheet of paper.
Do we need to do that since it's unanimous?
Is it unanimous?
Yes.
Okay. We don't have to.
Madam Chair.
Representative Craig.
I don't think you can.
I was just saying we can motion for so you can't do
right. Right.
Great.
Made a motion to nomination cease. Now we need a motion just to from the Senate. Okay, Senator Abdallah moves to adopt the motion for Senator Hansen of the E-Board, seconded by Senator Miles. Any discussion on that motion? Okay. This would be for the Senate then. All those in favor of the motion of Senator Hansen to the E-Board signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Abdallah, Allers,
aye.
Gray,
aye.
Miles, and Chair Hunt.
Aye. Motion carried. Senator Hansen, welcome to the Executive Board. We really are nicer than that. All right, with that, we will move to the director's report. Mr. Fry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your packet, you will find information that on the survey. And I would, on the first of all, on staff evaluation, we hand out a survey at the end of session, or handed out a survey at the end of the session to ask you to evaluate the performance of our staff in about five different areas. Each individual was then invited to bring that survey back, either signed or unsigned, and leave it with us. And we have tabulated those results, and you have them before you in the, it's on the green sheet, and it says 2010 Survey of Legislators on LRC Services. So that's where we are. The tabulation of people's votes is recited on the first two pages, and then the second two pages include comments from individual legislators if they decided to put down a comment. So that is the review of the staff performance. Overall, I think the legislators were pleased, very pleased, in fact, with the service they received during the session. So we're pleased with that, of course. But again, we expect legislators to come to us if they have individual concerns about something that the staff is doing or not doing, and make us aware of that. So and we invite that at any time that they wish to come forward. So.
Are there any comments? You know, I just did quick here. We had a 44% return rate on responses. Do we know what the response rate has been in the past on this?
I think the response rate has actually been slightly less than that in the past. So.
Any items or any discussion on any of the feedback that's been provided? Okay, hearing none, move on.
The next item will be the next, right after the, it's also in green ink, and that is the financial statement for fiscal year 2010. And what you have there is a recitation of the current status of our budget. And comparing, we compare that to the amount of year that's left, even though those expenditures are not linear. We have sufficient budget to make it to the end of the year. We would note that in 2009, we reverted $126,000. The 2010 budget saw cuts of $166,000. So if you compare reversion on 09 to the budget for year 2010, we started the year $40,000 off the pace. And we will finish the year, obviously, with a balanced budget. We won't spend more than we have. We never do. Whether there will be much of a reversion, of course, remains to be seen. But that is the situation in which we find ourselves. There was, of course, considerably reduced travel because of the limitations that you established as a board, and so we will have spent less money in that regard over the course of this this fiscal year. Those will be the major savings that you will see. Most of our other expenses are standardized. So we might just slip over to the next page. I think you have a...
Mr. Fry, before you do that, I had asked you, would you please explain for each of the programming what those items are in each of those sections?
Okay, legislative members involve the cost of putting on a session. They would involve your payment, your wages, your $6,000, and your $110 per diem through the session. And that's primarily... those are primarily their numbers. Also, travel for you coming in and any other expenditures we have directly related to the session itself. Legislative support and printing is primarily the front desk staff and the secretaries, and the printing of the bills and things of that nature. Research and analysis are primarily the staff salaries and costs of the research side of the office. The bill drafters, the people that staff the committees, and so on. Code, and then, of course, the fiscal staff as well. Code Council and the Code Commission, that's Doug Decker and the five members of the Code Commission themselves, and it also includes, of course, the cost of creating and disseminating the code. Intergovernmental cooperation is primarily dues, registration fees, and out-of-state travel for legislators. And contractual research is an expenditure item. If we want a contract with someone, for example, we paid for Ralph Brown to come in and do a budget analysis, or an economic analysis, not a budget analysis, an economic analysis. We paid for a portion of that along with the BFM people downstairs. So, and that is, that's where that money would come from. So if we have someone, a special presenter, come in, or we have someone over the interim who provides services to us of an expert witness type service, then we would pay for that particular person out of this pot of money. Also, if we asked for some kind of economic survey to be conducted, that sort of thing, we haven't done one of those in quite some time. But if we did, this is where we would get the money to pay for that as well.
Representative Brave.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim, in the legislative members area, is that, if we had to call a special session yet this year, is that where those dollars would come out of, and how much does a special session cost approximately?
A special session would cost us approximately $32,000 for one day, and then $28,000 for each additional day thereafter, 29, and the savings, or the difference, is travel. And yes, it would come out of this particular, well, as much of it as possible would come out of that program, and when we reach the end, then we would go get it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Our budget is, you should note, on the general bill, our budget is a one-line item. We do not split even between personal services and operational expenses. So we have a little more flexibility than the average agency.
Can we please have a review on what's available and remaining? For example, under contract research, there's not anyone we're anticipating for the end of this fiscal year, is there?
Madam Chair, no. At the current time, we do not anticipate any extraordinary expenses that we will have to pay out of any of these items that we aren't already anticipating. We don't, yes, and in fact, as far as contractual research, we don't have anyone on tap. Nothing has been suggested where we will need any expert testimony or expert assistance at this point. So we don't have anything coming out of that. Intergovernmental cooperation, we will, of course, somewhere from this budget, we will be paying the dues for 2011 for NCSL, CSG, ECS, which is Education Commission of the States, and the Uniform Laws Commission, which is the Model Laws Group. We pay up front as far as the dues are concerned. So we will be members in good standing of each of these organizations, assuming we have money left, and we should, for the 2011 fiscal year. Money that we're short in the FY11 budget will affect membership for 2012, not the coming year. So, again, to the extent, because we have traditionally for the last, 10 to 20 years, paid dues out of the previous year's budget. Of course, those were the years in which we had some money to revert as well. So, we'll see. But at the present time, we do not see anything coming down the pike that will cause this budget to potentially run in the red, and therefore we would make other changes. We would simply not pay any some of those. And the dues are the first thing we would look to. We would not pay those ahead of time if indeed we were short of money. That's where the money would come from to let us operate for the rest of the year, if indeed that became a problem. Again, we don't anticipate that as being a problem in this particular budget. We're about where we are at this time of the year compared to past years. We're not out of whack at all.
I guess my question is, we're at where we are we going to expend those dollars, or what are we looking at having left for reversion? I mean, that's my real question here,
right?
What's going to be left? And I'm not understanding on this. I see what's available, but I don't know what's projected out.
At the current time, well, we would given it will depend on how much money we've saved in the travel area, and I think we've saved something in the neighborhood of the $40,000 that we were short. We would expect our reversion to be quite small. We revert again in 126 last year. We would expect our reversion to be certainly less than I'm guessing at this point. No, you can't hold me to this one because I don't know exactly how it'll pan out, but I would expect our reversion to certainly be less than 50,000, probably less than 25.
Does that include those membership dollars that we're prepaying?
That includes expending those membership dollars. That means we would have spent those.
Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Frey, can you tell us what is the approximate dollars for those dues?
The cost of the dues are about $110,000 for NCSL, $85,000 for CSG. ECS, we pay one-third of that, and I think our share has generally been in around $18,000. And ULC, I think, is slightly less than that, $15,000 to $16,000. So $230,000, somewhere in that general area, $225,000.
Representative Berg.
Yeah, we'll pay about $18,000. We pay one-third of that. I think it's about $56,000, $58,000 total.
Any other questions on that? All right. Go ahead.
Thank you. And continuing on, then, you should see a page entitled Legislative Research Council FY 2010 Budget that shows a little bit of a history of how we went through the legislative process and then the budget process with the governor's recommended budget. You'll see seven items listed down the left-hand corner. It looks like this one. Okay. Just a quick recitation there historically of what we asked for. We asked for money to assist us in paying a certain, some Social Security obligations that we have due on the salaries for legislators. The increases that we have given to interns and pages over the years in order to make sure that they are able to come and be a part of the legislative process and not suffer, financially from that, especially in terms of the interns. 2 years ago, we began to withhold salary money, for federal income tax purposes on the money that we were giving to the interns because the IRS said we had to. There was some question about whether we needed to do so on the pages as well. We have not done that since they are such short-term individuals that we really couldn't get it done, and we couldn't pay them, in fact, in a timely manner. So, but we did say, to make sure that the interns would continue whole. In other words, we were paying them $110 a day per diem in order to make sure that they would still net approximately $110, we raised their per diem to $125. And then the $15 extra was basically withholding. So they got a raise. That cost us about $20,000, and we did not have it, but we were able to, of course, squeeze it out of other parts of the budget. We had money to cover that. We have asked for that, and the governor, in his recommended budget, declined to include that, and it was not included. The next item, number three, we pay for accidental death insurance for legislators. There has never been a claim on it, but we do pay for it, and it costs about $15,500 a year. That money was removed from our budget in the governor's recommended budget, and therefore we will not be able to purchase that insurance this year. And then we also asked for money that reflected basically increased dues, and we did not receive that money in the 2011 budget. Again, remembering that does not affect the 2011 dues year. It affects the 2012 dues year, or it may. It depends on what happens when we get to the end of FY11. Do we have money to pay some of the dues, all of the dues? Do we have a possibility of moving some of that money over into 2012? There are some contingencies there and some uncertainties, but we do not have that money. About $50,000 of that money is not included in the 2011 budget.
There's a question here. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you say they'll be 2012, do they run on a calendar year rather than our budget year?
No, they run on our budget year as well.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Item number five is the space billing. That is the cost simply of maintaining the area assigned to the legislature. It covers custodial services, utilities. I think those are the two big items. They do have a pool that they sometimes do replacement costs for small items. If a light fixture gets broken, or they'll pay for that as well. And in that space billing amount, it's so much per square foot. Our increase was $9,000, and BFM did put that into our budget. So that's why it's included there. We did get that money, but that, of course, is just in and out. We don't get to play with that at all. That is exactly what they'll bill us. That is the increase that they will bill us. So, and then I'll jump to item 7. That's insurance. That's health insurance for the staff. That reflects the amount of money that the increase in the amount of money we pay in order to secure health insurance for each member of each full-time member of the staff. Jumping back to item number 6, that was the big cut that occurred to the legislature on the last day of the session. That constitutes nearly all of the money we had for out-of-state travel. We had 155 in out-of-state travel. We now have 5. So we are we're in short supply for travel money this year.
Senator Gray.
Should we draw lots to see who gets to travel this year?
Chair, Representative Krebs.
I'd really like to be a part of that.
So those are the numbers as they exist today. Again, we see our budget as...
Excuse me, we have another question. Okay. Representative Putter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you get down towards the number 5, that space building, the governor's office calls that a projected space building, but you're saying those are actual numbers. How do they work out by the end of the year? Does BOA give us that number, and that's an absolute? Because it's taken from our budget, or it's in our budget, and it's taken. We don't have any say over that.
Usually, again, it's reflected as a per square foot. I've never seen that one be off by much. So
I know that they project those numbers themselves, and
right.
I don't know where that money. I guess I've not followed up on appropriations to see where that money goes with BOA, because they project those numbers and they rake it in after that. I have not followed that. So
yeah, I don't know where it goes. Once it goes into their, they bill us, and once it goes into their budget, I have no clue either.
Any other questions?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And that again, we will keep you advised. Even outside of meetings, if anything should pop up that's of major importance, but right now there's nothing on the horizon. I did include in your packet a meetings by rooms schedule that shows you the work of the occupancy of these rooms during the year. I actually ran it from the 1st of April 2009 to the 1st of April 2010, so that you can see how much we do rent out the rooms and the chambers. The chambers are rented and really not rented because we do not charge for any of the rooms at this time. The National Forensic League uses the chambers. The Teenage Republicans use the chambers. And I believe the school board also, school board association, oh, school administrators, not school board, excuse me, school administrators also holds an annual meeting in the House. So we do allow people to use the chambers. And then, as you will see, of course, we do have quite a bit of use of 120, 120, of 412, 413, and 414. That was the decision of this board that we ought to, because we had used taxpayer money and because we had put together the electronic access that we have in room 414, that we ought to make this available to state government generally, and they have used it extensively. So there is a little bit of a fudge factor in some of those rooms because they do show some usage during the session, but they don't show standing committee usage. Standing committees are not in there.
Any questions on that? Representative Rave.
Mr. Fry, I'm sorry. We don't charge other government agencies to use these rooms, correct?
That is correct, Representative Rave.
If we did, would that be any different? I'm just posing the question. Would that be any different than BIT charging a government agency to provide those services?
It would not. Representative Rave, we have in the past charged for the use of the rooms and recovered that money, and we chose not to do that again because at the time, we had just completed the renovation. We had done that with taxpayer money, so we walked away from the charges because it all came from the same pot, as it were.
Sure.
But it is no different than having BOA charge us for utilities and maintenance services, or BIT charge us for computer services. I don't think we have anybody else that bills back to us. Personnel, I think, bills back to the executive agencies, but I'm not sure about that. But I know BOA for sure and BIT for sure are a bill back agency.
I just merely posed the question in times of tight budget where, if other agencies are transferring monies, then possibly it's an area to look at. So.
Any other discussion on that? Okay, well, we'll hold that. I'm sure we're going to come back to that. Anything else, Mr. Fry?
You had asked for a report on new legislator orientation to occur in the fall. Would you like me to make remarks in regard to that? Every 2 years, because of turnover in the legislature, which usually averages between 25% and 35%, and actually was the average even before term limits, we do hold a new legislator orientation contemporaneously with the governor's budget message in early December. You will see there in the packet a sort of an overview. That's the presentation that I make to the new legislators as they come in. And then the sheet that follows, you'll notice there's one that's marked the salmon agenda and the other marked the olive agenda. We did that because this year we had so many people that were new that we actually split them up into two different tracks so that we could have smaller classes. This is basically a classroom exercise. It starts out with just general overview from the director, wherein the director explains some of the overall services that are available and the overall function of the LRC as the legislative staff, and then introduces the staff, and then individual members of the staff conduct individual seminars or classroom exercises on the various topics. And you see the topics listed below, everything from how the committees work to how things work on the floor, committee structures, and they generally talk a little bit about the appropriations process as well, so that new legislators have an overall view of how the session works. We normally spend a day to sometimes a day and a half on new legislator orientation. We use as a textbook the legislative reference book, which each one of you got. That's the 2-inch thick manual with the wire bound. It's blue or light blue in color, and you get one of those every 2 years, and we'll redo that one this year. And it has tabbed references to many of the departments and to some budget information, and also to some structural information in state government, and a little quick course on the how the website works as well. So we'll spend a lot of time going through all those things. So a new legislator who has not spent much time with this process will at least have an idea of how things proceed. We do it in a hurry. It's pretty intense. Probably Representative Cronin would be the most recent graduate of our new member orientation. So he can probably tell you, how he felt after we got done. I'm sure after a while the eyes begin to glaze over because the information comes like you were drinking out of a fire hose. Basically, there's a lot of stuff to cover, but there really isn't. And we also follow up then and have some more plans for following up the first week of the session. We go back and cover some of the things again after the legislators have had a chance to actually be in the trenches for a short time. They have smarter questions then because they understand that it doesn't always work the way they thought it might. So, but that's what new member orientation is about, and that's how we do it. And we have done it both ways. As far as legislator involvement, we have done it both ways. We've had legislators come in and talk about, especially about committee process and also about decorum on the floor, This year we simply didn't have time to get that that accomplished. Plus the people that had done it before were no longer in the legislature, so we didn't we need real veteran legislators to do that, and they're not always available. So, but we're open to that because obviously new legislators listen to veteran legislators certainly as much or more than they listen to the staff. So that's an effective way to teach. There just wasn't time for it this year. But then we didn't have, again, our normal group to do that. So that's where our new legislator orientation. The plan now is to proceed in much the same way until we hear differently. If you have other ideas, we'll incorporate them.
Thank you. Representative Berg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got two items here reading. The first one, you said you didn't have the veterans legislators that you would, you know, that to do that with. I mean, maybe we should bring back some that haven't been there for a while, you know, and because then you're reaching back a little further yet, and you're maybe bringing in a different time that, because sometimes we kind of form our own habits and things, and sometimes you need to look back further to a time when maybe there was, it ran a little differently. So
from that
point,
do that.
And this may be my next, what I'm going to propose isn't, hasn't as much to do with orientation as it does with the whole legislature. And like last time, we had some ethics things that we were working with. And I had the opportunity when I was back during session, we had an economic development meeting in Weston Springs. And we had a person from Extension was character count. And I, as a legislator, I have partaken in that, probably back in the early 2000s when character count first come. I think through all the state government, we had a forum that, and I had taken part in that. But it really kind of renewed my interest in bringing something like that back for the whole legislature and maybe doing it sometime that first week of the legislature, because not everybody comes back for the budget speech. And usually we have some afternoons free to do that. This can be as long or as short as you want it to be. I mean, it'd be pretty tough to put on anything less than 2 hours, and maybe you would want to put it on over even a couple of days, because sometimes, you know, to absorb what they do. Right now, character count, there's a lady out of, I think I've already given her card to you.
I haven't.
We talked about this before. And then I think Mitch Chapman out of, I think that's right, from Rapid City is one that teaches it out West River. But like our school has been going through, I think through the first semester, it was like a weekly thing they did. I'm not sure exactly how it did that for schools, but they'll design it for whatever type of person, if it's a business group or it's, you know, wherever it is. They design the program for what that group is. But I just wanted to throw that out there as an idea that maybe when we look we struggle with, you know, bringing in the right kind of ethics and all of that to do these things, and I think it's something we all need to be reminded of, and I just thought it might be a good time to do that, and I thought I'd throw it out here, so thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. You might remember that within the last 5 years, we have had two outside presenters come to the legislature. The first one was NCSL's staff, and they presented a sort of a form of character counts on sexual harassment. And we did that over in the visitor center and asked that the legislators be present for that. We also brought in the commander of the U.S. sub that surfaced and hit the Japanese ship and killed 9 people and so on. I think people wondered about that at the time, and after they heard the gentleman speak, we got so many favorable comments from him because he was an inspiring speaker who taught people about accountability and standing up and taking responsibility for what had happened under his watch or under his command. If you were there, you were treated to an outstanding personality who had gone through incredible hardship and difficulty, and he was able to speak to that and tell you how to make hard decisions and how to stand up for your decisions after you'd made them, especially when they go terribly, terribly wrong. So we have had a couple of people like that. I don't anticipate that we will have the kinds of dollars available this year that it takes to get someone, but possibly these people, we'll see what they cost. We'll see what they cost.
If I could, I don't know, Madam Chair, excuse me. Yeah, I don't know that they really would cost you anything, but I can't say that for certain. So.
We like that number.
Yeah.
The next item is for discussion, which leads me to my comment. You know, one of the things that I have a question about is about NCSL, CSG, and the other organizations that we belong to, some kind of mini brief overview so new members know what that is membership. I don't see that in the agenda, and I think that would be something at least somewhere you could squeeze in there to at least have an understanding what those organizations are.
Okay.
So we belong to this. My other question is, did you do an evaluation of that new member orientation?
We did not, Madam Chair, other than just by talking with people afterwards and asking them, you know, and generally the comments were the same. It's so much information that at some point they begin to glaze over. That's why we had, and was as in response to that, is why we began to look at follow-ups for people in the first or second week of the session as well to kind of help clear some of the glaze that occurs when they get their information that rapidly and that intensively. But no formal survey. If you'd like us to, we can certainly do that. That would be very straightforward. No problem there.
Thank you. I'm Representative Cronin, I don't want to put you on the spot, but just in a global perspective, I mean, is there, since you've been through it, and I think I can certainly align to what you're saying, that you're getting so overwhelmed with information, is there a better process, or do you have some suggestions globally, not, you know?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the session, I think I met for about 4.5 hours that first day prior to the budget address. And like you said, there's a lot of information and papers up the wazoo and your computer and everything. But I think most of it was figured out, in all honesty, between the new legislators. You talk to them, you sit next to the same guy the whole way through, and then you're talking back and forth and trying to figure stuff out. I mean, the paper lays it out for you pretty good. You just got to communicate with the new freshman legislators is mostly. And on another comment, I remember looking at all a bunch of faces that are in here today thinking, gosh, those people look really smart and mean. And I was wrong on both accounts. So. Well, I think the process is about all you can really do in the time constraints you have. Unless, you know, I'd be more than happy to come back and even if you wanted to have some legislators take an hour out of their day and break it down into a smaller group and just go into a room and ask, say, what do you got for questions? Because I know my first question would have been the committee process. I understand it, but without going through and reading this book, which I have since then, I didn't know the first thing. The first day that I went to the committee meeting, I had no idea of how things were going to work, what was the process for a bill. I mean, maybe just sit down and say, you know, listen first, because there was a few members that started jumping in with motions before we even got through the first bill that first day. So that would be, if there's one thing I would say we need to talk more of is the process in the committee.
Representative Rave.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, this brings up something I've been thinking about the last few years and I think as term limits continue to cycle through, I think we see, especially in the House, I'm not sure that it's a problem on the Senate side, but certainly on the House side, where a majority of the, you know, what we call true freshman legislators are at, and they get to be a more and more majority. I mean, this year, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but between the incoming group and then Representative Cronin's group, we're going to have a majority in the House that are less than 4 years experience in the process. And maybe this time to sit down and take a serious look at how we do this training, and maybe it involves more than a day, and maybe it involves, as Representative Berg said, both outside and inside legislators actually, you know, kind of maybe boots on the ground. I don't know how that works necessarily. Maybe it involves, I know with my committee chairs, I made them come in for a mandatory training, because I had committee chairs that had been on a committee been in the legislature for 2 years and have to be committee chairs. So I, you know, brought them in. We did some mock committee hearings just so they had a chance to even run the gavel. And I, you know, like Representative Cronin said, they come in and they don't have any idea where they're sitting at this desk. One day they're elected, and the next day they're sitting at this desk, and they don't have any idea how the process works. And I don't know, maybe it's time we take a serious look at that before fall, and that might involve something over the course of this summer to sit down and try and come up with a plan for that.
Thank you. I have a question. Are there any materials that go out, refresh my memory, what goes out to a new legislator when they're elected from here?
There's a lot of paper that goes out that's mostly shows structure, shows leadership, that sort of thing, and then the reference book and so on goes out to them. No, I believe they get the reference book the day they walk in the door, and we could probably send that out earlier. I'm not sure whether that will get read or not. Our experience has been somewhat, you know, spotty. Some do, some don't. But that's the question. But that's the things that they get sent ahead of time are primarily information about how the legislature is currently structured, who the leaders are, where the committees are, what the committees are, what the rules are, those sorts of things. That can be pretty dry stuff, but it is, you know, plenty helpful. We've always addressed the rules in this way, saying the good legislator knows the rules, the really good legislator knows how to use the rules. And that was sort of an enticement to get them to look at the rules and figure out how they work.
That was my question, really, because I was thinking, because the Red Book doesn't come out till after the Rules Committee meets and sets up, and I was wondering, in the manual, is that all in there, at least an outline of that, or, you know, so they have an idea with motions, types of motions, all that, is that in that binder?
The rules are in the binder. They're also available online and when we send them out. So the rules are always out there and relatively easily accessible. But you have to know they exist and you have to know they matter. And that's probably been the biggest burden, I think. You have to know they matter. Otherwise, they're just, you know, suggestions.
Any other comments? You know, I'm wondering one of the subcommittees, if they would want to, if there were some interested parties, I don't have the subcommittees in front of me. Is there one that could look at orientation and maybe come back as a suggestion with some of the ideas? Looks like personnel would probably be. Well, maybe personnel committee could look at general orientation, and that could be a committee assignment for the next meeting that we have, and look at that and take the comments that we had, and if there's any other comments by members, give it to the personnel committee, and they could look at that and then bring it back to the group. Does that sound acceptable? All right.
Who's the chair of that committee, Madam Chair?
You'd ask that.
You are.
I am, and it's Representative Krebs, Berg, Tiedemann, and Senator Miles. So we have our work cut out for us.
Do you want to do that by the May meeting or the June meeting?
June meeting. All right. Any other discussion items on the general orientation? And again, for their members, if you have some ideas, please forward that to Mr. Fry, and we'll take those into consideration. All right. We will move next to the next item, and that is discussion of the process of national committee appointments by presiding officers. I did bring that up, not realizing what our budget was going to look like, but I guess in the thought process was this. You know, as you come forward, the process, and I'll go back to when I started, there were sheets that came around and you signed up, and we all come with our backgrounds and where we believe we've got some expertise, so we tend to sign up for those committees. Well, if you sign up to NCSL, you sign up to CSG, term limits, how do we get people so we can get people in leadership positions? Because if you're gone to both, last year we limited travel to one meeting, we haven't got to travel here, we may not get to. So I was wondering if maybe an option is that you make a choice. You either do NCSL, you do CSG, or you do ALEC if that's going to be, and you only go to one, and then if there is travel that's allowed or whatever, you do that. And that's why I was suggesting have an orientation to which of those groups, because they may be the same, and they are. I mean, those of us that sit on both of those, a lot of the information is the same that comes down. But I'm thinking, how do we move people up if they want to be leaders in those national groups? Because in 8 years, you don't have that. That's why I brought it up. I don't know if there's any support or you just want to do. And again, knowing what we have for out-of-state travel may be a moot point, but yet you can still participate by telecommunications or whatever. So that was the reason I brought it up. I'm opening if there's any discussion on that or any support, or you just want to continue with what we're currently doing. Representative Byrd.
Madam Chair, I don't think that's a bad path. but I don't think we should let a new legislator have to make that decision before he's even involved in the process. You know, I think after their first year, then I think they have a little better idea of what each one of those groups do and where they'd want to be at. But I don't know that it'd be that they would, you know, it'd be fair to them to make that, have to almost make that decision before they've ever went to any at all. You know, that's just a thought on my part.
Well, I'm talking a lot more than I planned on today. Is this the point where you want us to talk about the process by presiding officers? Is that where we're at? Well, I would have to agree with Representative Berg. I think, you know, as a thinking back to your first year as a legislator, you have no idea, you know, we're talking about these trips. So I think, I guess my short answer is I think it still falls to the presiding officer, and maybe at their best guess, for lack of a better description, they have to decide who they're going to appoint and how they're going to do that. And I, you know, certainly with some guidance from this group, I would, you know, I won't get to do it again, but looking back, I wouldn't have had any problem, you know, just saying, Representative Berg, you're on one, and I'm going to put you on NCSL, and that's where you're at. So I don't think there's certainly not a science that I used. I let everyone have their input, and then from that input, I made a decision based on slots available, based on makeup of party, and just put together those appointments from there. But I think a little direction here certainly wouldn't be would be appropriate, and that's fine. I'd certainly take that as input as well, looking back. And
well, not hearing anything, sounds like you'd like to continue with the process. And again, it was just food for thought. Presiding officers, as you're making your decision and you're making your assignments, you take all that into consideration for those individuals. Is that what I'm hearing?
I will visit with Representative Rausch.
Okay. All right. Okay. Great. Thank you. Moving on. Next is the discussion and formation of legislative travel policy for fiscal year 2011. Well, the question is there other money beside the $5,000, and how we want to move on this? Senator Gray.
Well, I didn't speak on the last part because I think it's really our committee appointments next year and even this year are going to be largely driven by dollars available, and clearly we don't have much available. As I understand it, out-of-state travel, we've earmarked prior to the budget cut, $156,000, and we have $6,000 left. Our other travel is from summer studies and executive board meetings and appropriations meetings and so forth. And so, I think as we look at this, I think there's probably some need for some out-of-state travel. I think of the streamlined sales tax. I think of uniform laws. Some of those that we appoint individuals to represent the state on. So I also look at the at our summer studies and various committees and think that may be a good option to cut back on in terms of, and I know we're going to get to summer studies later, but you know, I think in this year where we're trying to pull in the reins on some of our finances, that we ought to take a look at all this in its entirety and pull back on some of our summer studies as well. And I'd go a step further and say maybe we ought to pull back on an executive board meeting or two, or alternatively, if we need to, hold them via conference call.
Thank you, Senator Gray. Representative Rave.
As far as e-board, could we... maybe it's a question for Jim. What does it cost difference to hold an e-board meeting or just to have one for 2 days? I suppose the lodging, the one night, doesn't make up for the travel. I suppose it's six one, half dozen the other. Okay.
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Being to talk a little bit about exec board and the travel. One thing, we wouldn't probably get away from the travel, but if we could get away from the lodging, if, like for me, it's not a big deal. because I can drive in easily in the morning, and I usually do, and that does it until it gets into later, you know, in the fall, then I might not. But if we even started at even like 10 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock, would that allow more people to drive in the morning rather than having to have the motel room overnight? And even if you go a little longer in the evening, you got such long daylight hours when we're meeting that, you know, those are little things, I know. But it wouldn't reflect on the travel as much as the lodging, but I don't, you know, because the travel is going to be the same, but that was just that's just a suggestion on my part.
Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think one thing that the next meeting, typically then we have all of those other subcommittees that meet before the total executive board meets. So we'll have personnel, we'll have the investment council, we'll have, then it makes it a little more difficult to drive in early that morning because if we start our meetings at 7:30, I'd be leaving Brookings at 4 in order to get here.
Representative Rafe.
Maybe on that one, to go along with what Representative Berg is saying, maybe we do start the meeting at 10, or maybe we start our subcommittee meetings at 10, meet for whatever time period we were going to meet, still only have lodging that night, hold our full e-board and maybe some of the next meeting or all of the next meeting we anticipate in that 1 2-day meeting. So then for one night's lodging travel, we've knocked out a whole nother meeting, and we still accomplished the subcommittee meetings. I'm not enthused about staying here for 2 days, but I think maybe we possibly could do that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gray.
I wonder if Director Fry can remind us, and I've been on this committee now for 5 or 6 years. Could you remind us those duties that we have? I mean, other than general business, we have some investment council duties, some summer study duties. Can you highlight what those are over the course of the next few meetings?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Senator, we in the May meeting, we will have to decide who will be the members. You will decide at this meeting what summer studies there are. We will have to then survey the membership, and they'll tell us what they want to serve on, and you'll decide who will serve on those meetings. So we populate those meetings or those committees in the May meeting. The June meeting is devoted to primarily to interviewing candidates for the investment council. And then the August meeting is for developing, primarily again, for developing a budget along. And again, there will always be housekeeping and so on. But we have to develop the budget at the August meeting for the purposes of submitting it to the Bureau of Finance and Management and the governor's recommended budget process. And then, of course, in November, you tail everything up. So we laid out the meetings in that way to cover the things that we really need to do. They do have to occur sequentially because, you know, you can't populate the committees until you know what they are. And then in June, you can't, you know, that's the latest you can do a replacement because the member comes off the board on the 1st of July. And in August is the earliest we can do a budget. We really couldn't do a budget. We'd really be guessing. We could do a budget in June, but we'd be guessing as to what it is because we wouldn't even have the end of the year. Now we can try to put it together. That would be the one meeting that you could arguably squeeze, you know, the housekeeping into the November meeting. The problem there is that you don't, because especially in election years, you don't have a meeting after that August meeting until November. That's a long time if you have anything popping up. So this would now make that a June to November split, which is a quite a time to go without a without board direction.
You know, I'm wondering, you know, from the discussion we're having to this point, we're not going to have, I take it, as many summer studies because we just don't. What if you had one meeting in that June 7th, that's the early, and you did the selection of the committee members for those summer studies because that would still give them June, July, August, September, October to do that. So you could kick out the May meeting and just have the June meeting, and then you've got the committee selection, and then you've got the code commission, the investment council, you've got all that at the June meeting. Don't have May. Then in August, with the budget and the intern program, you know, could we not hold that and hold that till November and just do it then and just have two meetings then?
Well, except that you can't turn the budget in November. We owe the budget to the Bureau of Finance and Management people in September.
Representative
for Burke. Their purposes, their recommended budget.
Thank you, Madam Chair. for the budget, and if that was the only thing we really were doing, we probably could do that in video conference somehow.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gray.
The reality, to follow up with Representative Berg, is that I'm not sure we've ever changed the budget in this executive board anyway. That being my point on the budget, in terms of actually selecting members to the committees, I think, one, it depends upon the committee or the summer studies we have, but two, I think June 7th would work. I think alternatively, I would relinquish my vote to give that to the personnel committee and the executive committee if they wanted to just do that as well. But for the summer study membership, with approval by this board on June 7th.
Representative Putnam.
Thank you. We've in the past had the five meetings. The statute says we have to have four. That's a shall. And it also says that they will be held in peer. That those are shalls. So having said that, the savings have to be, we have to at least put together, as you're talking about, the budget as well as the commission, the code commission, investment council, somewhere those have to be combined just to save that one total meeting. That would be our savings. Now, if they resort to more than one day, there really hasn't been a savings. I mean, I'm trying to look at the sheet. I'm just looking at the sheet that we put together for the schedules. That's the only way we could consolidate. Now, when you talk about going to the, I guess, if you will, the DDN or something, how will that fit with requiring under the law? Can we do that as something else? I mean, and still have the four posted meetings at peer? How does that fit in with the law?
What I would anticipate doing there would be having enough people in the room physically to bring the meeting to order and have other people then participate via video conference. It would be a split meeting. There would have to be some members of the board, not just staff, but some members of the board to drop a gavel. Well, I don't know if you'd have to have a quorum. That would be unclear to me. I mean, the law doesn't contemplate video conferencing. The law was adopted well before we had this capability. The most technical reading would be that we would have to have a quorum. But even if we had just the chair and the vice chair and maybe one other person enough to bring it to order and have everybody online at the same time, I'm not sure what would be the penalty for not doing that. And I think we're probably in pretty good shape. I think because you would have everybody there, you would have substantial compliance with the statute by having some people physically in peer, and certainly we would have a meeting. Part of the reason they want the meeting in peer is for the public. It's not for the legislators, it's for the public. We would have a room and the members of the public could be here. So we would have a place for the members of the public to appear. So we would meet the most important requirement.
Senator Gray.
Well, I'm going to offer a motion at this time that we, at the executive board for 2010, have meetings in June, August, and November. And we would eliminate the May meeting and consolidate that with other meetings.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Senator Gray, seconded by Representative Tiedemann, that the e-board meet June, August, and November. We do not meet in May. We combine that with the June meeting. Any discussion on that motion? Representative Putnam.
Well, does that meet the requirement of the four for the year? I mean, under the statutes? You're just doing... And April, okay.
We would have four, then we'd have April.
Okay, thank you.
Does that answer your question, Representative Putnam? All right. Any other discussion on that motion? Okay, the motion then. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll. Motion carried. Okay.
I won't be.
Okay.
You should note now that we'll decide who we want to staff that as your director won't be available in June. He has a wedding to go to. So
I think we can accommodate to that. I think you need to go to the wedding. All right.
It would be very ugly if I weren't there.
All right. We're running ahead of schedule. So I think what we'll do is We have a break scheduled. If you don't mind, we'll take the next item, which is public testimony on interim study requests. I know that one person had contacted me that did want to speak to that. So at this time, we'll open it up. There was a publication as to what summer studies were out there based on our discussion. I'm not sure we'll go that route, but I see someone is signing in. So you want to come forth and identify yourself? Yes.
Just to clarify, were we to have a discussion about broader travel policy?
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. My apologies to you. Yes, travel policy. Well, do we want to hear what the summer studies and do that and then come back to this item? Would that be okay? That way, if we're going to do anything, that would help us decide what our travel policy is. Is that okay? All right. So can we go ahead? Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Senators and Representatives. My name is Joy Smolniski, and I am the Director of the South Dakota Budget and Policy Project. The Budget and Policy Project strongly endorses using objective analysis of state budget and comprehensive information about fiscal policy options to craft the best possible legislation for the people of South Dakota. This past session, I attended your appropriations hearings, and I listened to your floor discussions. And I watched as you struggled significantly trying to cut spending and maximize revenue. It was obvious how difficult that it was. It's going to be even harder next year. It's going to be hard for you who bear the responsibility of the decision making for the people of South Dakota. And it's also going to be hard for the people of South Dakota who want and deserve an opportunity to understand the fairness and the necessity of the choices that you make. Among your summer study choices, there's a cluster of topics that have the potential to clarify the state's revenue picture. These are suggestions that call for a careful study of the state's current revenue sources, including the various rebate and waiver programs, and suggestions that look at the impact of such programs on the people of South Dakota and the businesses of South Dakota. The study suggestions listed in your survey that I'm referring to include D, which is a review of use tax relative to the difficulty of enforcement, E, which talks about comprehensive study of state revenues and taxation systems, F, which looks at economic development studies, history, and effectiveness of incentive programs, I, which looks at a study of contractors' excise taxes, M, calls for a study of sales tax, contractors' excise tax refunds and incentives. P, calls for a study of the impact of railroad tax credits with particular focus on property taxes due at the local government level. And S, talks about the study of sales and use tax system, including a study of tax exemptions and an analysis of the impacts of a sales and use tax increase. These various topics could be grouped together as a comprehensive revenue study, and that would examine all of your current revenue sources and all of the refunds of revenue that currently happen through rebate, tax waiver, or exemption policies. Such a study could also include an analysis of the fiscal impacts of various options to revising your current revenue sources. It could potentially look at expanding current revenues or expanding current rebate programs. It could look at eliminating revenues or eliminating or curtailing rebate programs. It could also look at what would happen if you introduce new revenues or new rebate programs. Each type of option has a different impact on the state's revenue picture and a different impact on the people of South Dakota. Understanding and clearly describing the full range of options and their impacts is critical. It helps you as a legislative body craft the best possible fiscal plan for our state. And it helps the people of South Dakota understand the range of choices that you are considering and what impacts they can expect from the choices you select. There's a subcommittee to a full revenue review that I'd particularly like to encourage you to consider. It's called a tax expenditure report. A tax expenditure report includes a thorough analysis of all the tax waivers, rebates, and refunds that are embedded in state statutes. Besides examining the lost revenue cost and the utilization trends, such a report can analyze whether tax side spending, if these programs are still accomplishing their original intention. As a public document, it clarifies the policy impacts of these refunds that are embedded in statute. I think you're aware that the Constitution requires that you annually publish a report that looks at all of your revenue sources, and you get to decide the content of that report. Revenue expenditures currently are not systematically included in that documentation, and so you don't annually look at your revenue expenditures. That you normally do look at all expenditures through your appropriations process, but not those revenue refunds and the revenue waivers. Without comprehensive objective analysis of the fiscal policy impact, decision makers are left to rely solely on personal experience, anecdotal evidence, and potentially self-interested testimony to discern how tax policy is benefiting or burdening our state and its residents. As a legislature, you're going to face some difficult challenges next year to resolve a significant budget deficit and hopefully to put in place a long-term revenue plan that will adequately fund the priorities of South Dakota state government. A summer study would provide the necessary time for a thorough objective research and thorough objective analysis. It provides time for thoughtful comparison of the impacts of various options, and it provides time to frame justifiable recommendations to strengthen our state's fiscal future. I strongly urge you to conduct a comprehensive revenue review, or at the very least, a comprehensive tax expenditure review as one of your summer studies. Thank you for your consideration, and I'll stand by should you have any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you did a magnificent job of laying out what the real problems are, or maybe I shouldn't say problems, but I think you laid out a real good synopsis of the difficulties we have at getting our arms around this. In another year and another time, I would be wholeheartedly wanting to jump into this. Some of my reservations come from a little resistance of really going into full-fledged studies of some of this is the fact that we are going to be changing administration next time. I would like to see where these people are going to go with that, whoever it is that takes over. And I can argue both sides of this thing that we should be proactive and be out ahead and maybe have an understanding of this. And another part of me that says, if it's going to be done anyway, can we do it in conjunction with whatever policy and philosophies that next governor's going to have. So much of what you're relying on is the same thing, and I know you sat through those meetings maybe even a little more loyally than I did. I think you did a tremendous job of overseeing or looking at what we were doing and bringing up some of the shortcomings of what it's there. But so much of what we rely on is the executive branch cooperations in giving us this information and working with us on this. And I'm not sure we're going to get any more than what we have in the past of going down this road at this time. But I agree with what your synopsis is and what you've said there wholeheartedly. I'm just wondering which path we take this time at this time. And I'm throwing a lot of this out for just discussion and thought, you know. But I think you did a very good job about laying it. And thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, would like to at least qualify that your report is well done and well put together. And are you going to submit your report in writing for purposes so we would have it here, that we would be able to read through it a little bit further?
Yes, I do have copies. I'll send it around.
Appreciate that. That would help us in there was a lot of things said in there that would that do need a little examining. I'll follow along a little bit. The best plan that I could think of, and being a legislator over the number of years, and I'm sure that others would say the same thing, has to do with having a crystal ball. No problems in laying out a plan that would show revenue and show expenditures, and it would show them in such a light that we would be able to make them work at any given time. I think we all strive to do that. Unfortunately, the economy, which we don't control, has a major part in playing in what we do in a governmental role. The downside of having a citizen legislature like we have in South Dakota is part-time. We depend on others to mass information for us and slide it into slots that fit within about a 30-day period of examining and putting in place something that we think is going to be successful. Having no knowledge of that crystal ball, what's going to happen to the economy. And therein lies some of the problems that we run into continually from year to year. As you pointed out, the expenditure, just having thought about expenditures with regard to revenue, how that plays out is what I would call it, things that are in the budget now that weren't in the budget, I'll say, 10 years ago that we accept into the budget that were all special appropriations so many years ago. And they've been rounded out and put into a budget. And how we would be able to look into the future to determine which one of those would work, we won't know. For example, where there was talk this year of a couple programs being taken out because they were the last ones in, which made it some sense. But whether or not that's for the general welfare of our public and whether or not those dollars should be found in some way, and of course the only way we find additional revenue is through taxes or in reducing the ongoing expenses. So we run into that little part. So the answer, I believe your report is very well done. The overlying end should be we have to have that crystal ball. And how that will work is extremely difficult for all of us here. And we use that projection, if you will, at the end of the year in the appropriations project. And you also see a lot of times people talking about projections. And that's the crystal ball that we have. And when it works, it works just fine in South Dakota, but when it doesn't work for South Dakota or any other state too. But I commend you for the report and look forward to reading through it and gaining some information as we go through. Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I respond? I guess I would also remind you that 41 of the 50 states do tax expenditure reports. Only 9 do not. South Dakota is one of those 9. Our neighbors to the south, Nebraska, and to the east, Minnesota, do particularly comprehensive ones that are available on the Internet. I'd be happy to get you link information on that so you can see how they go through their statutes, how they enumerate what their tax expenditures are, and then how they analyze impact out of that. And, of course, that's projective analysis, as you said. But there are some models available from our local Midwestern region.
Thank you. Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to echo Representative Berg's and Representative Putnam's comments about what you put together, Joy. I think it's done very well. I would say, though, there's 46 states that are not financially doing extremely well, and we're one of the states above those 46, and I would not look to the east or the south to find a solution on how to balance a budget because I know to the east, they're struggling immensely to try and balance that budget. There is that revenue and regulation annual report that is put out that does an excellent job of explaining the current taxes in place and identifies where the revenues are going to be coming. I think one of the things is that arrives at a legislator's desk during session and not enough of our cohorts read through that. Because I've just gone through a tutorial with some of my legislators after session, sharing with them the information that we can find that's already harvested and put together in a nice booklet that identifies when the tax was passed, how many dollars come in, and what dollars typically can be used then for expenditure. And it's putting all those pieces of the puzzle together. But I really think Representative Byrd captured it extremely well. I don't think the timing is right this year for that. I think the new administration needs to come forth and put that, and I think we're 1 year ahead of where it really needs to be done. But thank you for bringing this forward.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is probably more comment than that, and kind of a question maybe for Jim, the director. I think because of the economic times, it almost makes it more important that we do those things, because I think we know we're not going to be able to do business in the same manner as we have been doing. And for Jim, how difficult would it be for our staff to go through and on each one of those issues, and I think we've talked about it among ourselves, put an issue memorandum together. But being the constraints in time and money and everything else, could we do this a little more in-house with our fiscal staff? Because to me, we need a counterbalance to the executive side of how a lot of this information comes to us. Because we pretty much are at the mercy, their mercy, to take their numbers and do what we do with them without having maybe an independent analysis of it the way we should have to look at that. That maybe on some of these things and policies, could we do a lot of this in-house?
Madam Chair, certainly the staff could prepare a budget and expenditure, or a revenue and expenditure report. It would be looking back, though, rather than looking ahead, would be the thing that would be of concern, of course, and timing. You get a substantial amount of that information in the booklet that we prepare for the Appropriations Committee after we have analyzed the governor's budget, or recommended budget, for the ensuing fiscal year. So we have a great deal of that information in there anyway. Certainly doing one in the July, August, September time frame, looking back at the previous fiscal year, is quite doable. That would be something that we could make available to people. And again, given the somewhat static nature of what we're about now, that would have some accuracy and some validity for your future deliberations. So the long answer, the short answer is yes.
Maybe that's something we could talk about when we're discussing the summer studies based on this comment. Any other questions for Joy? Well, thank you for your time. Excellent paper, and we appreciate certainly your attendance at the appropriations. You get the golden star, as you were the most faithful there. And I think the outcome of that is the product that you have produced for us and as your representation for the budget and policy project. So I say thank you for that.
And thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there any other public testimony here on any of the summer studies that have been out that have been proposed by members of the legislature? Anyone else? No? Okay. Thank you. I think what we'll do is we'll recess here for about 15 minutes, and then we'll come back. We're ahead of schedule, and maybe we can move forward. But before we do that, we need to sit down, Representative Putnam. For those of you that are here, we're going to have a little bit of a celebration. We're in recess, right? Our colleague over here had a birthday. Here for further public testimony. Just a reminder to please sign in and then come up to the table here and identify yourself and provide the testimony for the summer studies. Ma'am? And then be sure, I don't know if you signed in, so when you get it. Okay, great. Thank you. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
The button, there's a green button here. Identify yourself, because we're online so people can be listening at this time.
My name is Connie Halverson, and I work for Delta Dental of South Dakota, but I'm here today on behalf of Voices for Children to ask that you consider Representative Susie Blake's legislative interim study proposed to study economic disparity and the impact of poverty on communities, and most importantly, maybe what the legislature can do to help. We operate a mobile dental program and have for the last just about 6 years. And that's kind of where our exposure to poverty has kind of arisen. And I just had three, I guess, quick points for you to consider. One is that poverty in South Dakota is much more pervasive than I think almost anybody realizes. Our mobile program manager, she has worked for, had volunteered for United Way and CASA and lots of other programs. And the first 6 months she was on the road, she came back and said, I had no idea of the extent of poverty in this state. And it's not just Native Americans. I think a lot of people think that's, you know, the worst part of it. And the other thing is that most people are working. I mean, the people that come to our program, they have more than one job, a lot of them. And the second point is that it affects us all. It greatly affects the state budget, crime, everything like that. And I know you have a lot of probably good programs to study this summer, but it is something that literally affects us all, even to the point of I have two girls who are in middle school, and when there's a kid who maybe is hungry or hasn't has a tooth problem and their parents can't afford to take care of it, that's affecting my kid because maybe they're not paying attention in school and they're not, the teacher's time has to be allocated for those types of things. So it literally affects all of us. And the children, the kids don't have a choice. They don't choose what family they're born into, and they just don't have the resources to deal with that. So it is something that is pervasive. And what we would encourage you to do is to examine or to do this summer study to think about what things maybe can be done. I mean, I know there's not a lot of new money, and a lot of the programs affecting the poor are federal, but there may be creative ways to match money. You could look at predatory lending laws, housing tax credits, literacy programs on our mobile program. So many people can't read. I mean, when I started, we did our forms, and our program manager would come back and say, you got to change this. They don't understand what that means. And I thought I had simplified it to, you know, as much as I possibly can. Things like Medicaid eligibility. I know it's been discussed to do a year-round eligibility, and I think there are hidden costs to things like that when it's month on, month off, that, you know, maybe directly to the Medicaid budget is affects, but if a dentist is fed up because 1 month the parent booked the appointment and the next month they're off of Medicaid, now that dentist is mad and he gets out of the program, well, that just makes more for everybody else to take care of. So there are in ER visits. If you're, you know, if you're off or on, it's hard to make appointments, you're going to go into the ER. So there are hidden costs, I think, to a lot of the things that we do that I think the legislature could really have some impact on. So I would just encourage you to consider this study. Any questions?
There we go. Are there questions for our speaker? Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, the mobile dental clinic, you talked about that. That's going out now. Is that where we are using some of the interns or the dental students from, like, Nebraska to go out and assist with that?
Yes, we do.
And currently, aren't we also supporting that on a from the legislative perspective?
A little bit through the Department of Health.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And a little bit, what, about $50,000?
Mm-hmm.
Just in your comments, you said, do you keep track of the individuals where you say somebody's on Medicaid, somebody's off? I mean, those flips. Like, over the past year, how many participants, or how do you keep track of that?
We see about 3,000 kids a year now that we have two vehicles, and about half are on Medicaid, half are uninsured. Well, actually, there's about 4 or 5% that do have some form of insurance. A lot of times it doesn't cover much, but a lot of them are uninsured. And at one point we had studied, after about the first year, I think, almost 90% of the kids had at one time been on Medicaid. So if they're going off Medicaid, they're not going off by much. They're probably just right above the line.
Just for a matter of process, so I'm on Medicaid, I come off, and I come back, then I have to start the paperwork all over again. Is that the frustration that you're talking about with providers?
I think it's a lot of that kind of thing, making the appointments. You know, a lot of times dental offices book quite a ways out, and then if they're not on, you know, there's some retroactive things and that sort of thing, but it just is frustrating, I know, for dental offices when they're off and on. So.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here that wants to provide some public testimony on the summer studies? Good morning.
Thank you for having me this morning. My name is Buddy Siner. I'm with the South Dakota Head Start Association, their executive director. I, too, am on behalf of the South Dakota Voices for Children Poverty Coalition in support of Representative Blake's study. Just from a Head Start perspective, I'd like to provide you with a little background. Head Start services are provided to around 4,700 families from around the state of South Dakota, low-income families primarily. Provided these families to try and help them take a step away from the grip of poverty. Not only by educating their young children, 0 to age 5 children, but by providing the parents and these families with tools necessary to help them take that next step towards sustainability as a family. One example is Ms. Halverson stated, these families don't often set up appointments themselves. And Head Start services help these families fill out forms and help these families set up appointments, doctor's appointments for themselves and their children, help them teach them how to do this. So when they do not have Head Start services available, it's something they can do on their own. That's just one of the services available. In addition to caring for their children throughout the day for free, it helps these families immensely. The unfortunate part of this is that demand for these services is continuing to increase. This year, our waiting list Head Start waiting lists around the state are 20% higher than last year. And that trend is continuing. We're continuing to see that trend increase. And I think that alone shows how important it is for this study and how important it would be not only for Head Start communities in South Dakota, but for communities on a statewide basis. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No? Okay.
Thank you
very much. Any other individuals here to provide testimony for some summer studies? Anyone else? Okay. Well, thank you for those of you that took time out of your busy schedules of providing services to come forth. We appreciate that. So we'll move to the second side of the agenda where we're talking about selection of 2010 interim study topics. Once we make that selection, then I'm going to ask after we do that to go back, and then we'll talk about travel policy based on that and what we want to do in that arena. So, Representative Krebs.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think we all recognize the budget situation that we're facing in the state of South Dakota, and we all recognize that the interim study ideas and thoughts that have been presented to us have a lot of potential and a lot of potential, but not only that, but just possibilities that we want to look at. That being said, is it the right time to do that? Is this year the year to do that? We also have to take in consideration that we do have the two agency reviews to look at that with the Creover Administration and Dirt and Water, or DENR. And my thought behind this process as far as proposals of 2010 interim study topics is that for the summer of 2010 is that we hold off on any summer studies that have been presented to us by our legislative body and maybe think about looking at these top 10 or so that have been ranked to pick out possibility of having issue memorandums or white papers on these particular topics, because we will have the two agency reviews. So I would like to have that topic of discussion brought to you, to your attention.
Thank you. Just 1 minute, Senator. Just for purposes for members of the committee, Mr. Fry, do you want to talk about what a white paper issue memorandum is and at least explain what the process is involved? And then I'll take you, Senator Abdallah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Legislative staff, LRC staff, has historically prepared what are basically research papers surrounding a particular issue. A member or two members of the staff will collaborate on developing an extensive study and research into a particular topic of interest suggested by the legislature. The results of their research is compiled in a report, anywhere from 5 to 9 pages, sometimes longer, depends on the topic, and that issue memorandum is then submitted to the board in November. The board approves it after having looked it over, reviewed it, and so on. And that issue memorandum is then made available not only to all members of the legislature, but is also placed online in a searchable database so that anyone who wants to read it can do so. But it is basically an exhaustive, in-depth study of a particular topic as defined by the legislature, reduced to writing. It's what I guess I would call as a graduate level term paper, almost a thesis on a particular topic. Will suggest what perhaps other states have done. Will certainly include a historical recitation of what this legislature has done in that particular area in past years. So.
Thank you. Any questions on the process? All right, Senator Abdullah. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question on the memorandum. Director Fry, do they do an executive summary as well as the full page? Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I might, we have not done an executive summary, but we can.
With that, there are one of the things to precede this conversation. I have asked the staff to put together a history of what summer topics we've been so we can have that in the discussion because some of these have been covered and that might play in on the discussion that we're going to have. Senator Abdullah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I agree that we should, at least it was my intention to show some restraint on summer studies because of the fiscal situation we're in. However, I'm neither an opponent or a proponent of number 9, the study of the potential of creation of Veterans of Affairs as a cabinet level department. And the reason I say that is in the last 2 or 3 years in the legislature during session, we've had discussions back and forth about this exact thing. And I think that we owe it to the 70-some thousand veterans in South Dakota to at least have a study rather than just say we're not even going to study it. Have a study. Whatever the outcome is, up or down, makes no difference to me, but I think that we should study it and take testimony from the veterans who feel that they should have a Veterans Affairs cabinet-level department. And discuss it with the summer study, have a study done on it, take testimony, and make a recommendation to the 2011 legislature. And like I said, I don't think, I'm not in favor of a whole bunch of studies, but I think this sore has been festering for 3 or 4 years, and I think we owe it to the veterans of the state to at least have a hearing so they know what the legislature or what the study committee how the study committee feels, and we can go from there. But to not do this, to me, it'd be a slap in the face to our veterans, saying we're not concerned. But we should show some concern and have a study, and then at least we can come to them, regardless of the outcome, and say we had the study. The support isn't there, or the support is there, which however it comes out.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While I support the idea of helping and providing assistance to our veterans, I do want to go along with our Vice Chair and the comment of the dollars. By statute, we have to do the sunset review committees, and we're down the road a number of years in that process. And I go back to what Representative Berg said earlier, that one, this restructuring of the executive branch will be up to the next governor, and I don't know if this study is going to make any difference to whoever walks into that position. So I think we may be just spinning the wheels, but I do support that we need to do something for the military and veterans affairs issue. We did a sunset review on that, what was it, about 3 years ago or 4 years ago? And that was one of the recommendations that was to be looked at. It came out of the sunset review, and, you know, thus far nothing has really happened. But I really think this is something that's up to the next governor to decide 4 years ago. Okay. Thank you.
Senator Abdullah, and then Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, that's exactly what I'm getting at, that there was a study or whatever that Representative Tiedemann's alluding to that 4 or 5 years ago, and nothing's been done. I understand the restraints we have on money, but how much money would this cost to have this study? And like I said, it's only fair that we have this hearing or have a study done for our veterans. And if we're talking about money, I can't think of a better place to spend money than our veterans. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for them. And so to put it off another year, to wait till the next administration is just putting it off for another year. And I think the time has come that we should act on it now.
Thank you. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know I'm one that's also have said about, you know, limiting the amount of studies and all that, but I look at the redistricting one, and that was the number one one. That is probably the one that the next governor will have some influence on, but it's usually after the fact of what the legislature does. I happen to be on the exec board 10 years ago or 8 years ago when it was done. And I know what a monumental task it is, and I know Reuben has been done that for several years, but I think it might not hurt to be a little more proactive on this one. I think this is one study that if we don't do it now, it's got to be done next year. But I think we had some basis of things that we could set the groundwork for. I also think we need to bring in outside groups to have their input in. And when we get to the actual redistricting, that'll be pretty much a legislative committee that does it. Not that we can't have input from outside groups, we can. But I almost think that this would be wise to have this so we have that type of input from other places, the courts, the citizens out there, and how we redistrict. Because last time we had a pretty good study of the committee, you know, went through and did it, but it was kind of on a rush basis because you got to have it done basically next year or in the next between the next session and the following session. And I just think that with time frames they have, I think that'd be a very good one to do. And I would, my recommendation, that would be the only one we would do.
Okay, as we're moving along the table here, we've had discussion on the some comments in regarding to the number 9, which is the potential creation of the Department of Veterans Affairs. We also just heard something now on 1, and then we've heard doing some papers. Any other comments? And then I think what we should do is entertain some motions, at least to give us some direction as to where we need to go. Right. Jim, you want a handout? I do have a handout for you, and it's on the number 2 one, the health care reform. The governor's office is planning to do a health reform implementation plan, and this is what's on the sheet, and this is put together the agencies that are affected, and their plan is that those departments would be assigned. We all know the extent and we've heard over and over the number of pages of that healthcare reform, and assign them to teams that would work on it. Basically, what they would do is look at what the legislation is proposing, what we currently have on statute, and that's called a gap analysis, and then what would we have to do to come into compliance with that. Once they do that, then they would look at a short-term plan and conclude with looking at what our current plans, both long and short term, are, and then make a recommendation to the incoming administration. In talking with them, they had said that they were doing this. They had noted that we were considering that for a summer study. And what I had asked is if we could include legislators on this task force, because anything that's being recommended to the next administration would have to go through the legislature if there were any statute changes. And they came back this morning and said that they would, and what I'd look at for recommending would go back to the Speaker and the President to appoint two senators and two representatives, two from both parties, that would be part of that task force that would be working with that review process. And then we'd have the connection there, the coordination, and then whatever comes, again, the new administration, whatever they would decide to do. So this is the plan that the governor's office has for their study of health care reform. The caveat would be we would have two senators, two representatives, two from each party. That would be part of that. Now, you might not be in the subgroup, say DSS is looking at their plan, but they would have time quarterly meetings that would update you and provide opportunity for input and direction as to where that's going. Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did you say there'll be two senators of each party and then two senators or two reps from each party?
Total of four. Two senators, one Republican, one Democrat, then in the House, one House member, Democrat, Republican.
Okay, that would beg the question, then, has the governor suggested how many he's going to have? The reason I ask is you may remember the last, I guess you could call it a health care task force, there must have been close to 50 or 60 people on there, and whether, you know, and what, and they came out with a whole book of recommendations, and I'm just curious what our representation would be on this committee. And we're certainly going to have something that's equivalent if there's going to be voting rights. Because they're calling in civilian citizens, if you will, and I don't know if they're going to make any changes or not.
What I've been told is they'll still use the Health Care Commission, that group, as a sounding board. What they're doing is bringing in recommendations ultimately to give to the next administration. So when you talk about voting rights, it would be how we come into compliance with the current statutes, whatever, in health care reform. Those of us that are working in that arena, that changes every day. You're getting some new pieces, and they're trying to see where do we. And if you're looking at the top, the agencies would be DSS, Department of Health, Human Services, BOP, DOI, BFM, and Department of Education. So those departments will have groups working within them. What I'm trying to establish is a coordination and a collaboration with the legislature, and to have people that have some knowledge base that are maybe sitting on health care committees or whatever. That's to the purview of the leaders in those houses to identify who those people would be. As far as voting rights, the voting rights would be, or the recommendations, that's ultimately next administration and the next legislature. It's to see how far are we away from compliance, what could be coming down to the states. Did that answer your question, Representative?
I think it does. And so you're suggesting then that at least we have folks that are going to sit on there until at least election time. And if those people don't get elected, then you're going to have to call them back again, too. But I'm just trying to sort out how it's going to be done and what the governor is actually asking for. And it sounds like this is his copy of what they're going to look at. But that's fine. I was just curious as if there were going to be any legislation planned from this or recommendations. Thank you.
Right. Recommendations. Senator Miles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with you that I think we don't, based on the topic, second number one chosen for the summer studies, if we've got the governor's study group taking a look at, you know, how is that health care reform going to affect South Dakota, but we need to tie in the health care commission on that, because members of that committee are actively working in health care that would positively or be able to provide input into that also. So if they work together, having representatives from the Senate and the House on that, I'm okay with that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then just a real quick question. Are the expenses for these four going to be picked up by the governor and not come out of our budget?
Well, that's a good question. Probably we should do that, right?
Yes, we should.
Yes, we should. All right. I will communicate that back to the executive branch. Representative Turbeville.
Yeah, just and maybe you can help me on this. It's my understanding from what I have been able to grasp as far as the Health Reform Act that has been passed, there is going to be a period of time when Congress itself has to sort this out to determine exactly what it means and what when it's going to be implemented. It's my understanding there are some parts of this program that aren't going to be implemented until 2014. Is it your thought that this would be an ongoing group that over a period of time will continue to meet as we get additional information? Is this going to be something that, you know, we're just going to do a summer study? Because I think we're looking at probably another year, year and a half, maybe 2 years before a lot of the things that they're talking about will even be discussed in Congress.
I'm not the one to answer the question, but I think there are some things that are right now that we have to start preparing for, especially with the Medicaid population, the number that we're going to absorb and make access to. And so you're also looking at insurance, what kind of coverage, what kind of programs. Yes, some of those things are down the road, but in actuality, it's not Congress. It's the Secretary of Human Services, Sebeas, that's got 1,700 programming rules that they're going to have to interpret and put into place. That's what's the challenge that's out there for all of us. And I think what this group is trying to do is what's coming down. We can't be reactive. We've got to be proactive and setting up. So this group could continue as things change along the line, but it's to help this next legislature, the next administration. What are the things that we've got to start looking at and putting into place in the state? Because with this number of Medicaid recipients coming on board, potentially the first 2 years are supposed to cover 100% of that, and then after that the states are going to cover. We're talking probably an additional $36 to $40 million more that we're going to have to cover these additionals on. So that's part of this whole process to look at that. And there's restructuring with insurance and other programming that's going on. That's why all these services are or departments are being included in that discussion, because it hits those areas. Representative Putnam.
Thank you, then. Well, it sounds like we have established, you have a liaison between the governor's office, and they have agreed that they will allow these members to come on. Do you need a motion then that we send forward our two reps and two senators after the session starts? Or when are we going to, I mean, do you need a motion here at the e-board to qualify that we've agreed with the executive branch?
I think what I would like is a motion to tell the leaders to appoint those people to participate.
And would that be the leaders in our respective houses?
Right, the speaker and the president, yes.
Republicans and Democrats, or just the speaker and so forth?
What would be the committee's pleasure? I would hope that they would consult with the leadership on both parties to identify who that should be. And I'm looking at Speaker Rave, that you would do that, that you would visit with the minority leader in the House. And
well, I would move that motion then, that the leaders of our independent houses put in place two senators, two representatives, each of being of a party. I would make that motion for the purpose of the health reform plan that the governor is putting together.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Representative Berg, did you have some comment?
Yes, it doesn't necessarily tend. Thank you, Madam Chair. This task force that's already in place, is it a commission or a task force? And who? What is the makeup of that? Is there legislators on there already?
No, there's no legislators on this. This is coming out of the executive branch, and it's to prepare.
No,
there's no.
But I mean this the healthcare commission.
Oh, yes, there are legislators on the healthcare commission. Who's isn't Senator Dempster on that? There are legislators, are there not? On the healthcare commission, there isn't? Okay, I can't answer that.
And what is the makeup of that commission if we're using that or we're tagging onto that commission?
We're not tagging on. It's going to be a sounding board for this group. I mean, this healthcare commission, they're the ones that have prioritized healthcare projects in the state, and the long-term care project came out of that. You've got representatives from the three systems. You've got dentals on there. You've got anybody that's tied to. I'm looking. Are you, Mr. Fryer, are you getting a list of the healthcare commission? He'll get. There's lots of people on there.
That's good enough, and that really probably doesn't have anything to do with what this motion is. So thank you.
Senator Abdel.
Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. I must have been sleeping. Who decided who's going to pay for this?
we're going. The governor will take it back and say he needs to come out of the executive branch. All right. We're back to the motion. Any further discussion? None? Representative Rave.
As long as we're waiting on the, Mr. Fry. Second, Krebs. Just to clarify, you know, typically the appointees, that's the way it's always worked, and I'll speak for Senator Gray that he will consult, I'm sure, with the minority leader as I do in the House. So.
All right. Any
further? All the meetings in Sioux Falls.
Okay. All right. Senator Abdullah.
I talked to Senator Gray just before he had to run somewhere. Could we put this vote on hold, seeing that how he has to make one of the appointments? He said he'd be back in 15 minutes.
I talked to Senator Gray before he left, and he was okay with this.
Okay.
All right. The commission members, thank you, Representative Berg. Ruben, pull this out. These are the components. There's business employers, consumers, insurers, healthcare providers, public community health workers, governor's office, former legislators, tribal members, mental health providers, and Indian Health Services. So those are the representatives' contingencies that are on the healthcare commission. Thank you. Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, just for the record, I think this is not a task force. It's not a committee. It's a health reform implementation team.
Thank you. Team. From the executive branch. All right. Are we okay with that? All right. The motion before you is for the appointment by the leaders of both houses, two senators, one from each party, two representatives, one from each party. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you.
All
right. Now, if we want to do some things, let's have some motions and we can have some discussion on that. Okay. Representative Putnam.
Well, I would thank you, Madam Chair. I would suggest the same thing as Senator Abdullah said, until we get our members back, if Representative or Senator Gray is going to be here, I think he'd be interested in whether or not we're going to make any motions with regard to our interim study and so forth.
All right.
Maybe a lunch break or something like that. Be sure where our members are here so that they're going to hear the things that they're interested in.
All right. Thank you. Was there anything else on? Senator Abdullah.
Just for a housekeeping deal, particularly for Representative Putnam and myself, is there any way we can set the dates of the e-board meetings in June, August, and November?
They've been set.
Where are they?
We're going at June 7th, August 23rd, and November 15th.
Thank you.
All right. Again, June 7th, August 23rd, November 15th.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, that's perfect.
All right. Very good.
I think we should change that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krebs.
Would anybody in the committee like to change that August date to the first week of August or so?
All right. Well, if we're not going to take any, and I'm looking at the agenda, it's really...
Location.
Oh, there we go. We're finishing up on the items. It has to do with travel and selection, so I guess we could... Well, let's wait till
you light
back.
A candle.
All right. Well, let's recess then and come back at 12:30. Time was that we were starting to talk about travel. A couple pieces of information, just FYI. First of all, there's a correction in the date of our meeting, Senator Abdullah. It is August 16th instead of the 23rd. It's the 16th, and I believe those copies were distributed. And then secondly, as part of the discussion piece, when we're talking about what we have for resources, I had Jim put together what the compensation reimbursement is for interim meetings. So as you can see, there's really two pieces. There is a salary, which is the per diem of $110. Then also people are get a travel expense for meals, lodging, and the auto expense. So just for discussion pieces, if you wanted to break something apart and just did a travel expense or a salary or whatever, that's just a piece for discussion so you know. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So now on that list where he has the travel, does that include like your meals and that stuff when you're traveling here to Pierre? Because I don't think you break that out, do you?
No, that would be your travel expense. If you come for a day, you get the 26 for the meals, the 50, 22
okay.
for lodging.
But the $110 is broken up separately. Is that correct?
Right. You get two things.
Yeah. So, okay, I was just checking on that
okay.
for sure.
Right.
Okay. So that travel is part of the other cost of being here.
No.
Yeah.
There's two reimbursements. You get a per diem, and then you get the travel, and those are the three items that are included in travel.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. With that, then, we can continue with discussion. Senator Gray, just in your absence, and you had indicated you would be supportive of the point of appointing the four people to the health care group. So that's the only piece that we have acted upon. Now I'll open it up if there are motions for action, and then we'll come back to travel after we decide what we're going to do. I'm sorry, Representative Berg.
Madam Chair, I make a motion that we do number one, the Intern Redistrict Planning Committee.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Representative Berg, seconded by Senator Hansen to do number one, which is Interim Redistricting Pre-Planning Committee. Comments on that motion, Representative Berg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just think, you know, it was the one that had the highest rating out of the whole thing. It's one of those things that really only comes along every 10 years. I think it would help to have a leg up on it to when it really is being done the following year. And I think we should really explore some of the options we have of and how we do it rather than maybe just the same way we've always done it. And I think this would be a good summer study to have. Thank you.
Any further comments? Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, just a question for Director Fry. Is this something that could be laid out by the staff to talk about rather than having a study committee? I mean, there are certain steps that we have to go through, and I'm wondering if that's the process that we need. Otherwise, I would ask Representative Berg, what's the goal of really having that committee? What are you going to accomplish by having it? So two questions. Thank you.
Perfect. Mr. Fry.
Thank you, Chair. Historically, the staff has begun to do maps and to look at the data when we have good numbers. Those good numbers will not be available to us until the March-April timeframe of 2011. So at that point, we will then begin to look at maps, looking at counties whose boundaries do not need to be broken, and also look at the areas of the state that must be accounted for under the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act. And so we'll work on those two things, and then we'll begin to draw up some ideas. And then this year, we will have started a little bit of the computer programming ahead of that. But generally, we will start when we have data we can build into the system, because until that time, you don't have anything down to the level that you need. So that's when we'll start, or when we have started historically.
Thank you. Representative Berg, did you want to?
Yeah, I will. You know, I think what we mean to want to get to is to be proactive on this. And partly, I think we need to get outside interest groups involved in this, whether we need, and maybe we need some laws changed next session to do what we need to do, you know, because I think we need to look at how other states are doing it. And instead of just, you know, last time I think the process wasn't bad until we got up to the time of voting, and then we kind of kicked everything we did out the door, and a few people grabbed it, and they drew up their plan, and that's what we voted on. But I think we need to be proactive and open this up to the whole public, because I think this is one of the most fundamental principles we have in democracy, at how well we redistrict. I know when my brother was a legislator back in the 1980s, he always praised Joe Barnett, a man I never met, but I've always heard a lot about, at how fair and how he took upon his shoulders to make for sure redistricting was done in a nonpartisan and as fair a way as possible. And I think we need to get back to that principle, and I think we need to open this up to the public, and I think to move forward, and if we do need to change some laws to do it, we have next session to be able to do it. We'd recommend. This is probably going to get done if we do it as a committee here or not, because there's interest groups out there that's going to take this upon themselves. Now, whether we want to be part of that, that's up to this committee to decide. But I think we need to have a better look at how this is being done.
Representative Krebs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Director Frey. Director Frey, has any of the Legislative Research Council staff been attending national meetings to learn about the new changes and some of the new processes going on in other states?
Madam Chair, if I might. Okay. We have not yet at this time. There are several being sponsored by NCSL, and we will try to get to one of those national meetings fairly soon to make sure, especially, that we don't miss something in the Voting Rights Act. Other than that, most of our staff has been through this so many times that they're pretty well on top of it. But we do need to know, for among other things, frankly, the Attorney General is different this time, and the person handling the Voting Rights Act is different. And so we need to meet that person. We need to talk about how they're going to approach what we do and how much preclearance, for example, that we must do. We got into quite a bit of trouble last time because we didn't pre-clear, and they argued that we should, and the federal judge agreed. So now we're duty bound to pre-clear everything, and we'll need to do that. We'll need to find out what their approach to that is. We'll see who's left on the staff from before. As far as contact people are concerned, those things we can find out by going to a national meeting. So we'll have to do at least one, but we haven't yet.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Okay. The motion before then is to adopt interim redistricting pre-planning committee as a summer study. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
No.
Aye. No.
No.
Chair
Hunt-Hall. No. Motion failed.
Madam Chair.
Senator Abdullah.
Coming off of a defeat like that, I don't know if this is the time, but I would propose in a motion to adopt number 9, the study of the potential creation of a Department of Veterans Affairs as a cabinet level department. There's been a lot of talk today about the cost. I think the cost, I mean, we can't just go out of business as a state. And we've got to do some things, and this is one of the things I feel we got to do. There's over 70-some thousand veterans in the state. That makes up over 10% of the entire population of the state. We owe it to our veterans to at least listen, have a study, pro or con, and go back to them and say, we had a study on this, and here's the findings, and here's our recommendations. We're not recommending a separate state affairs officer, or we are, but this has been festering for 4 or 5 years, back and forth. It's caused heartburn for the executive branch. It's caused heartburn for the legislative branch. The cost cannot be that much when you consider the cost our veterans have given to us in the state and the nation, and I think that we should at least, we owe it to them to at least listen and listen to their story and listen to the pros and cons of the subject and decide. So I move that we adopt that as a summer study.
Thank you. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Miles. Any further discussion on that motion? Representative Turbeville.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I don't know how many people in this, excuse me, in this room are veterans. I am. And I think that, over the years that I've been back in South Dakota since returning from Vietnam, that I feel that we've been very well taken care of. And I agree with the comments that were made previously by Representative Tiedemann. We need to wait and let the new governor make that decision. And also another thing, if you recall, the current executive director of the Veterans Division is leaving, and there will be a new one appointed. So I think that we really need to let the new governor, let the process go ahead and take its course. Sure, waiting one more year is just putting it off, but I think it's something that we need to do. And so I would I can't support this. And like I said, as a veteran, I feel we've been very well taken care of. This year, we've actually passed some veterans legislation that has helped them substantially. We're doing a new veterans home in the eastern part of the state, and that's something that is going to be a huge advantage. We also changed the requirements for the executive director to include someone who has a honorable discharge. So the veterans are well taken care of, and I can't support this motion.
Thank you. Senator Abdullah?
Well, with all due respect to Representative Turbeville, I believe the director has already left and there's a new one been appointed. So that situation is gone. But that festered several years between the governor's office and the veterans, and it turns out that they made the change. And I'm not asking, you know, if you feel the veteran's been taken care of, that's fine. I'm not going to argue that point. All I'm saying is they deserve a hearing. Well, regardless of how it comes out, all they're asking for and all I'm asking for is for a committee of six or three or five to have a hearing. They've been waiting 5 years, and to ask to wait until the next administration takes over is just another stall for another year. And I can hear it now. When the new administration comes in, something like this will come up, and they'll say, well, let's give the new governor a chance. Let's give him a year or two to think about this and worry about it. All I'm asking is we have a study this summer, and when the new administration comes in, we can go before the new governor and say, look, this has been around for 5 or 6 years. We've been studying it and studying it and studying it. We had a summer study, governor, and here's what we've found, and here's what we're recommending. And he can say, I appreciate it. That's a good idea. We'll do it. Or I don't like the idea. We aren't going to do it. But to use the excuse to put it off for another year is just another stall job. And I think, again, the veterans of this state and the United States deserve a 4 or 5-member committee to study the needs of what they're requesting. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Any other comments? The motion before potential of the Department of Veterans Affairs as a cabinet-level department. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Aye.
No.
No.
No. Motion failed. Senator Gray.
I'd move at this time that we have no interim studies and only do the sunset review committees.
It's been moved by Senator Gray, seconded by Senator Ahlers, that we do not have any summer studies and we only do the department reviews. Any comments to that motion? Here.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm maybe not the best person to ask about summer studies. I've never really enjoyed them. I do know that there's a value for some legislators in summer studies, and that many of them can be educational. I give credit to a number of legislators for doing summer studies on alcohol and sex offenders and things like that. I know there's some value that has come out of some of them in the past. But in light of our budget, in light of the fact that we will have new executive leadership and new legislative leadership next year, I think this is a good year to not do summer studies.
Representative Krebs.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I agree with what Senator Gray has proposed. We know we have excellent ideas on our interim study proposals. I think it's just maybe timing. And with that being said, we want to make sure that we consider the conversation we'd had earlier in the day about issue memorandums. And the proposal of Senator Abdallah's study, maybe that could be considered as an issue memorandum. And in other areas of the such. So I think when we're making this vote, let's consider our next action or motion be to consider white papers on some of these subjects.
Thank you. Any other comments? Senator Abdallah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I don't disagree with Senator Gray. And I was trying to slip the veterans one in as one or two that I thought might work. And I will support his motion. But keep in mind, we're sitting here talking about being broke and talking about not spending money. And when you look over the travel summary of some of the legislators that spend $8,000, $7,000, $6,000, $5,000 on travel, it's hard for me to believe that we can't find money for some of the worthwhile studies. And I can tell you this, that we still got to do the people's business. And when we're spending all this money on legislative travel and then stand up here and be hypocritical enough to say we can't spend any money on these studies, I don't like it and I don't agree with it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, the motion before you is that we do not do any summer studies and look to do the departmental reviews that we have identified previously. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carried.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krebs.
I propose in a white paper an issue memorandum. I suppose we should probably make these as individual motions, but one possibility could be starting out with the previous motion of Senator Abdallah's, an issue memorandum on white paper review of the potential of the creation of a Department of Veterans Affairs at a cabinet-level position or cabinet-level department.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Representative Krebs, second by Representative Rave. Turbeville, I'm sorry, to recommend a white paper on number 9, which is to study the potential creation of the Department of Veterans Affairs as a cabinet-level department. Any discussion on that motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. It was previously studied in 2006. I think it's an opportunity to at least present the legislative body with an idea, because there will be a change in the executive leadership. We'll at least have an idea of what some of the proposals that could happen or what we could do as a legislature for a cabinet-level department for the 2011 session, when there will be a new leadership, a new governor. Keeping in mind, I believe the candidates, meaning the governor's candidates, did have a forum with that group, and I believe at that forum there was the discussion about this, and they also came out of that as an entirety of the entire group of candidates did agree that they would want to look into this, and I think that was a part of the agreement as well, is that they would be working with the Veterans Affairs groups to in the next administration on that particular issue.
Any other comments on that? Was there anybody here that was on that review of military and veterans affairs when this was done in 06? No. Oh, yes. What do you recall? I mean, was there any recommendations that came out of that group for the specific activity that's been identified here?
I don't recall any of them that had to do with this subject matter. This subject matter had come up since that time. It had something to do with their leaders and people that were put into executive positions. But our study at that time had to do with more along the study plans of whether or not there would be certain armories in certain areas and how we would construct that system. But nothing to do with this subject about the executive branch making it a specific bureau or a specific cabinet level.
Okay, thank you. Representative Tiedemann.
And just to add on to what Representative Putnam talked about, I think the biggest thing that came up was the compensation of our county veteran service officers and how they're serving, in some cases, a very few people, and in some other locations, a huge number, and the training of them and the appointment and keeping them up to date if they only are dealing with one or two in a month. That it was very difficult. So that was the one issue that came up.
Thank you. Any other comments? All right. The motion before you is a white paper on the study of potential creation of Department of Veterans Affairs as a cabinet department at level. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Aye.
Motion carried. Is there any other suggestions for an issue memorandum or anything? No? Okay. Then we will move to the state agencies to be studied. We had identified two for 2010. That was the Bureau of Administration and DENR. Senator Miles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you review for everyone and the audience as far as what the purpose of the state agency reviews are? The goal?
Thank you. I will ask Mr. Fry.
We have a study plan that we apply to each of the state agencies. Originally, flight as a sunset review back in the 70s and early 80s to determine what agencies we needed or didn't need. That evolved over time, and when Representative Peterson brought it back to the legislature right around the turn of the millennium, the idea was to look at each individual agency, determine why it was created, what its role was, how well it was fulfilling its role, whether it needed some changes in existing law to fulfill its role better or to get rid of superfluous or arcane language and clean up their statutes, take a look at how they measured their performance, and then also to delve into their budget in a way to help the committee understand what they did and what it cost to do what it was they did, and also to determine whether what they were doing was still rational or if they needed an update in terms of their mission and their goals. So that is basically in a nutshell. They look at the agencies with a fine-tooth comb, get a pretty substantial dog and pony show in the first meeting, and then go on to look at specific issues, to look at specific statutes, to look at potential changes in the role of that agency.
Senator Miles?
Yes, follow-up question, please. Or a suggestion. I think some of the state agency reviews, at least some that I've been a part of, and looking at past history of state agency reviews, I guess I would like to propose maybe a new format, because some have been probably more successful than others based on outcomes. Just recently comes to mind the Sex Offender Registry group, some of those, and I guess that was an interim study. Back up. What I'd like to see is more outcome-based process improvement for the agencies, because I know we're not going to sunset them anymore. But what can we do as a legislative body to be able to have maybe, and I think you guys have it in appropriations. They have a synopsis of what their agency does, some of the programs that they have that fall underneath there, and then take a look at like more of a process improvement format. How many people do they serve with that program? What's the revenue that they have to take care of that program? What are the expenses? And then a little bit based on outcomes. And then I think that information would be more beneficial to legislators.
Thank you. Any other? Representative Putnam.
Thank you. Director Fry might be able to have this at his fingertips now. There is a format for this, and it's very strict. You may remember last year we combined two of them together. That happened to be the Department of Transportation, and it's whether or not they should even be done away with, or whether or not there should be some sort of money or revenue for the roads. But there's some very strict language, and I don't know performance-based outcome. I don't know how we plug that into that strict language, but it might be of some help that that committee members who serve on these committees with regard to the sunsetting of it. This year it'll happen to be members that have been here at least 2 years, so they'll have some advantage of knowing what that committee is and what they should do with it. But maybe there is a way that you can plug that into those strict guidelines that we've got.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair. Yes, Representative. There's no question but what we could try to develop a change, or we would place in the summer study plan a change that would spend more time trying to measure things based on outcomes and requiring them to present us with performance-based types of evaluation programs. Those are popular. We've discussed it several times with the executive branch, as you know, over the last 3 or 4 years, as to whether the executive branch ought to adopt those sort of things. The executive branch has said that they would be more than willing to do that if you can show us one that really works. We'll be quite blunt. That was difficult to do. There's a lot of rhetoric that gets aimed at those performance-based programs, and sometimes it's just that, and it stops short of that kind of thing. But we certainly can, for our purposes, take a look more at outcome-based performance measures and evaluations. And there was something you said, for more emphasis initially on the who's served and what the cost is. Was that included in your statement earlier?
Yeah, Madam Chair, the basically kind of an executive summary at the top that says what the agency is about, who they serve, you know, yeah. And then to take a look at the programs underneath that are underneath that department. And I have a twofold reason for doing this. And then take a look at what those programs are, how many people they serve in those in that particular program, or, you know, maybe they got 5, 10 of them, I don't know, depends on the department. And then what revenue they have to be able to serve that program. Is it state funds, federal funds, whatever? And then outcomes and expenses.
If I might.
Go ahead.
If I might just note, that will apply very effectively to an agency like DNR, which serves a number of different constituencies and has a number of specific programs, whether it's water quality or if it's environmental protection, that sort of thing. So they'll be able to lay that very nicely for you. The Bureau of Administration, not so much, because remember, they primarily serve the state agencies and the people who benefit from the physical plant that we have for the people of South Dakota and for the employees of South Dakota. So their mission is going to be a little differently. So there will be some performance-based things, but as to who they serve and how many, probably not relevant here. But certainly performance-based measurements will and evaluations would work there, too.
Representative Tiedemann and then Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe to help answer the question that you have, Senator Miles, last year with the Bureau of Personnel, of course, that's pretty much an internal. But there were also an opportunity for the outside entities, i.e., the insurance providers for the state employees, the health system, because they're part of that whole partnership that helped provide that benefit package for state employees. But we went through exactly what you're talking about. We identified, what their mission, what their role was, who they're serving, and looked at some of the statutes that were in place that were archaic, that needed to be changed because of the sexual language, the gender-specific, that type of thing, and also looked at some of the things that came forward from the outside testimony. There was concern that some staff were never evaluated. And so that issue was brought forth by the committee that, one, every staff person needs to be evaluated. The importance of maintaining some state involvement in the health plan. Because if you put that whole burden on state employees, what happens is that the young and those who are healthy will not pay for it for their families, and then you have uninsured. And so you're going to cause a double whammy. So the committee came up with like five recommendations that they brought forth to eBoard that looked at that. We looked at where they were housed. We found that, in one case, one of the training sites is over at the basement of the Military and Veterans Affairs, not a real ideal location for training new employees. So we were very thorough in looking at that. Thank you.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I 2 years ago, I was on the Tourism and Economic Development Study, and I think what has transpired in the last 2 years in our budget talks, when the tour with the historical and the arts, when we tried to cut them, and they were a very, very active part of that study. I think that was a part that really surprised me at how vocal and how much in each one of those communities they were. So when we came to make those cuts, I think it was a lot tougher decision than it might have been otherwise if I hadn't sat on that. And one of the other things at that committee, in the first meeting, I threw out whether we should have split tourism and economic development. Well, it really didn't come out of that study, but it's interesting now to see where two of the governor candidates has proposed splitting that out again. So I don't think we want to structure them so strictly that they can't go where they need to go, because I was frustrated on the governance of tech schools a couple years ago when I was on that study, but that was a legislative intern, that wasn't an agency review, but we had such a narrow focus of where we wanted to go that too often we couldn't go where you needed to go in having that study. So, but I think these formats are pretty good, and I think a lot of it depends upon who's chairing them and how much they're going to put into it and how they're going to let it go to. So, but I think it's very important in who we pick to chair these things. But I think it's very important that we do them. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments, direction? All right, we selected these, so they're already been decided upon. And then I think we have to make a recommendation which ones we want to review during the 2011 interim. And on your sheet, there's three departments that are agencies remaining.
Actually, public safety no longer. We had that public safety. I'm sorry. So there are only two left.
So there's only two left. And if we put the two down for 2011, then BFM and Department of Health, is that correct? So that would be the last two then. Is that all right?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are these the size of these committees already predetermined, or are we going to determine the size of the committees that we put together to review them?
Madam Chair, you will determine the size of the committees.
Well, then that brings up what should be the size of the committees. Senator Gray.
Madam Chair, I wonder if we can do that at the next meeting when we have input on who wants
to be on there. All right, that's fine. We can do that. Thank you. Senator Abdullah. All right. Then we'll return back to the front page, and we'll talk about our legislative travel policy. Before we do that, though, Mr. Fry, do you want to indicate to us, are there any committees that are mandated by statute that would have to meet this summer as we take into consideration?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We, of course, will have several statutory committees. It is possible, it is certain that state tribal will meet, and it is probable that they will meet twice. So you will have that, and we will have to provide for that group as well. It is possible, but not probable, that retirement laws may meet because of the recent changes to the retirement system. GOAC will meet, but they have adopted an interesting approach to tours. Instead of taking the whole committee on tour, they will allocate basically subgroups or subcommittees to handle items or areas of interest, and small groups will go check out those places, and they will use people that are located very close to those facilities. So we will have a little activity on GOAC's part, but it will be much reduced from previous years. So we'll have those people involved. Then there is the property tax or assessment oversight task force that may have to meet because, of course, there is considerable unhappiness, as there always is, over assessments. And there may need to be some tweaking of the existing law, or at least some discussion and an opportunity for property taxpayers to be heard and to express their concerns. And so that task force may have to meet. That task force is made up of both legislators and non-legislators, but we pay the freight generally for that one. So, and whether we'll have to, that one would probably not have to meet until, and should not meet until late summer, which means the money will come out of the 2011 budget. But hopefully that could be done in one meeting.
Okay.
So those are the ones that we know of right now. There is no ag tour. Oh, appropriations, of course, will have meetings. Whether they will do a tour, I think there's some indication you may not do a tour this year. And the ag committees, the joint ag committees, will not be doing a tour this summer, nor will health. And I did survey a couple of others. There are no others that I'm aware of that could be doing a tour. So.
Okay, so we know that tribal relations potentially two times, retirement is a potential, GOAC is meeting but we're not traveling, appropriations will be meeting but not traveling. Just looking for one meeting for 15 members, you have this information in your packet. Total expense for one day is $4,875 for 15 people to attend. Representative Putnam.
Just to thank you, Madam Chair, just to sort out what we might be thinking here. If we know pretty roughly what our travel dollars are going to be in the budget, are we going to back into that number, or are we going to suggest something else? And that probably isn't the right terminology, but it sounds like we're going to have to live within this budget, and that means sorting out what we have in front of us. There's about five, for sure, committees here that might be formed and are going to go forward. So how many meetings, how much travel is going to be involved? Do we do that today, or should we put that on the agenda and try to work out some dollars? In other words, if the GOAC committee meets twice, will we know how much travel money is going to be used there? If we've all agreed that there will be no tours, that will be simply, you know, we can stop thinking about that. But is that what you have in mind? And what would you think the committee should do right now? We know we should be able to project the dollars that are in our balance.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. If I might respond to that, that will be driven by the dollars, where we put the money. The point, I guess, is that because of the way our budget is structured, we don't necessarily have to choose at this point. We can allocate and make sure we hold back enough money so that we will be able to pay for the summer committees, and to the extent then that we do have in-state money available to us yet, and to the extent that we will not be spending, and we can estimate with some validity how much in-state money we might have available for other travel purposes, we will simply be able to spend that. That will then show up in the budget as an over expenditure in intergovernmental relations and
because it will when we spend it, we'll code it out of there, but we'll pull it from somewhere else. Or we can try to estimate about what we will have available and put it in that back into that category. I think the former is preferable. And we'll just overspend because we don't know where we're going, and we'd be guessing. So we will have some money, but it will be remarkably constrained, from what we've had before. Certainly less than probably 25% of what we've had before. We can't replace anywhere near the $150,000. We won't even come close. But there would be some opportunity to use some of the money that you've saved by not having summer studies for educational experiences for legislators.
Just a question. Has Tribal Relations scheduled a meeting before July 1st?
I don't believe they have. I don't believe they have scheduled one yet. I know they're working on one, but I don't believe that it's going to, I don't think it's going to go into effect before, so we can spend it out of this year's fiscal budget. We can try to move that ahead and see if that could happen.
This is my question, I guess, as to your comments and to Representative Putnam as we're looking at this. GOAC, appropriations, if tribal relations, e-board, and property tax, if they can meet prior to July 1st, realizing what is available, for dollars, we'll know also what we're not expending by not doing the summer studies and having a better. So when we come back in June, then we'd have a better idea of what's there. Now, the challenge becomes people are going to be requesting to go to out-of-state meetings. And so I think we need to have some kind of at least policy in the sense, do we grant or do we prioritize, or are there certain committees that people have to attend to nationally for representation, and you take that as we need to count for that? Representative Krebs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I make a motion that we suspend for 1 year all out-of-state travel and only allowing the standing committees for in-state travel, but excluding the three particular areas of sales tax streamlining, the meetings, the Uniform Commission Code, and then the chair position appointments only.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gray.
Question, just to clarify that last exception, what is that?
That would be the appointed chairpersons to certain committees that have been appointed by they've been elected positions to certain committees on national groups, organizations.
I'm sorry, I'm not shaking my head because I understand that. Okay. What I'm not clear on that.
Madam.
Speaker Rave.
What she is referring to are those folks that are appointed to national committees that on those committees or those organizations have been elected to chair positions. I guess, Representative Krebs, if you'd be open to this, since we're having a little attitude, would you, I think those individuals that are vice chairs as well should be allowed to travel if we're going to go down the road of chair, merely from the fact that those are the folks that would be the next chair people. So I'd say either both or none would make more sense to me, but
I'll get you, Representative. Right now we have on the table, are you asking her to amend her motion to include chair and vice chair, just so we know what we have on the table?
I am. Madam Chair, I'd amend the motion for chair and vice chair elected positions to those appointed meetings.
Just a minute. Senator Dollars, are you willing to second that?
I'll second it.
All right. Now we're open for discussion. Oh, you. I'm sorry, Senator Abdallah, you second it? Okay. All right. Let's get a clarification. Go ahead with your question.
How many people is this involved?
Three.
Not three.
Ms. Joni Cutler.
Not very many. Yeah, Valley and Chairhead, Representative Cutler, you could probably count them without having to take off your shoes. I think they'd all be on two hands. It'd be less, 10 or less. That would be actually chairs or vice chairs of a national meeting, unless that would change. Now, that could change with this summer, because they may do more, but we don't have very many.
I thought Representative Krebs had a great idea, but I'm not willing to second her amended motion.
right. Now you know who the second was.
Do I have somebody that'll second it for? Okay, all right. Now, Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this including sending any of our staff to any of these meetings? Because they can still go.
Correct.
Okay.
Just legislative.
Okay. So we don't really control the staff part of that. Is that correct, Jim?
That is correct.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure because I do think it's important that we do have their input to bring it back, especially NCSL and some of those. And I also would like to know who these chairs and vice chairs are and how many of them there are, you know. And maybe we can go ahead and vote on it anyway, but, you know, good. So, and have that here next time. So thank you.
Representative Rave.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of things. First, to clarify, I made that amendment not to endorse or to not endorse the motion. I just think that it makes more sense to clarify if we are going to include chairs, then you should include those folks that are going to be chairs instead of boxing them out basically from that position. And just to reiterate, I believe the ones I know of, I think there's less than half a dozen legislators that are in those positions as of today.
Senator Abdullah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make a comment. We discussed on summer studies and the cost of summer studies, and then we turn around and we want to authorize travel, and according to this thing that was handed out earlier, $121,263.71 is spent so far in out-of-state travel. Now, it makes no sense to me that we're sitting here trying to take care of ourselves, paying for out-of-state travel, but we don't want to spend the money for a summer study for a lot of the worthwhile subjects that were listed, whether it was the one I proposed or whether it was the redistricting or whether it was the tax deal. We don't have the money for that, but we've got $121,000 already, and we want to keep going. It makes no sense to me at all.
Madam Chair. Representative Krebs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Further clarification, this would be eliminating the travel, out-of-state travel, and only allowing the travel to those certain organizations that people have been elected to a higher-ranking position, and the Streamlined Sales Tax Commission and the Uniform Commission Code. Those are the two areas that we would need some representation from South Dakota on. So everybody else would not be allowed to travel for that year.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gray.
I hate to open a can of worms. I'm with most of this, but just to clarify, this is state paid travel. There's a number. I just want to clarify. There's a number of requests that I get, and I'm sure Chair Hunoff gets. They want to send you to something all expenses paid, and they want a representative from this body or that body. I just want to clarify that we're not prohibiting that.
Representative Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm trying to sort this out a little bit myself. There is a sheet that came from Director Fry, and it shows the total of out-of-state at $121,000. I think that's what Senator Abdullah is talking about over here. And it excludes the interim dollars that we don't want to get mixed up here. So is the motion for only legislators and nothing to do with the staff of the LRC?
Correct.
Do we know what that savings would be?
Director Fry?
We do not. Certainly, if you have limited out-of-state travel to committee chairs and vice chairs, and there are less than 10 of them, plus streamlined sales tax, ULC, you will have substantial savings in out-of-state travel. I would think that if it cost about, let's say that if we just sent 20 people and it costs $2,000 a meeting, that would sit you at $40,000. That would save you $80,000. That's just an if. And of course, anytime you say that, people take it as gospel. So now that'll be the figure that's out there. But I mean, it would be somewhere in that ballpark or better than that.
So if I follow up, Madam Chair, Thank you. So it sounds as if that if we do shorten or eliminate a lot of the out-of-state travel, that automatically eliminates some of the staff travel that we're not talking about. Does that make sense? In other words, staff doesn't travel to meetings without legislators, do they? Are we talking about two different things here? So far, we're talking about legislative travel. Do we have to talk about staff travel also, because that is a budgetary item?
You have to talk, well, if I might,
Madam
Chair. Yeah, you will, if you want to include that and limit staff travel, there are some meetings to which staff will attend the National Association of Legislative Information Technology people. Mm-hmm. We send two people to that. We do send people to the annual meeting, members of the staff. We have spent six people. It has been much reduced in current years. And, of course, we did have that discussion earlier about the number of staff that we would have to send to redistricting if we have a redistricting thing. So right now you haven't limited staff travel. Staff travel comes out of a different pot of money, as it were, but it's still all the same big bucket. It's in a different category. But so if you want to do something, that was not affected by the cut. But if you want to limit staff travel, that certainly is your prerogative.
Thank you.
Well, I think there's a couple of things that have surfaced here that I need a clarification on. First of all, when you said streamline, we have three people going to streamline now. Would that mean those three people would go to streamline, or we would only send one person to streamline? That's one. Number two, I believe Senator Hansen, you and Representative Pitts are on some Canadian... That's not been mentioned in here, and that's you two, or how many people go to that?
There's eight of us.
There are eight of you that go to that. And I believe, is the meeting here this year, or?
Moorhead.
Oh, it's in Moorhead. What meetings are coming up here very shortly? Nobody's going to NCSL, I don't think. I've had... What?
NCSL was just in April.
Okay.
Alec. And then May is CSG.
Okay, May is CSG. That's still in this fiscal year. So there's still dollars in this fiscal year if people needed to complete on that. Representative Cronin.
The Alec one that's coming up is not paid for or requested any state funds. That's paid for by Alec itself.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. You know, I personally, I'm not comfortable because I don't know the numbers and I don't know the dollars. That's what's got me a little bit concerned. My other, you know, as chair here, and if somebody's making a request, I guess since we're not meeting till June, at least we'd have a closer idea for that. I guess with what I'm asking maybe here, I know there's a motion on the table. I'm not ready. I guess we can vote on it, but personally, I'm not ready because I don't know the dollars that are tied to that and what we're talking about. And then, as I'm saying, if we've got this Canadian thing and we've got some other things in there, is that all part of this? And I'm wondering if when we come back in June and then we have the numbers and the number of people. Now, it's looking like overall that out-of-state travel just for going to a meeting, if I signed up for NCSL Health Committee, probably would be denied. I mean, that we wouldn't have that. And so if we wait and you allow the chairperson, if somebody makes a request, unless they're a chairman or something, you know, saying no to that attendance until we come back in June for our meeting and then see what the dollars are. That's my zone. I guess I'm uncomfortable. I don't know. Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I agree with that. The only concern, and if we go along with the motion of suspending all out-of-state travel, okay, because you also have that the early bird registration, which comes up, I think, before our June meeting almost, and so you need to know if we're sending anybody, and if, especially to like NCSL, I mean, that's, I know one that they have that early bird registration, and it's a huge savings.
Let's vote on the motion, and that may tell the direction of what you want the chair to do. So the motion before you then is that we would suspend all out-of-state travel except for Streamline, Uniform Commission, and then the chair and the vice chair of national committees. Is that correct? Senator Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does this motion start on July 1, or is it for the interim committee of this whole summer?
I would believe, I assumed it was July 1st. July 1st. Fiscal year 11. So there's still dollars if there's some meetings, anything that's left here through June 30th. Except there's a clarification.
Clarification, because I know that your meeting is at the end of June, but that would be from FY11 dollars. We can't. We will be cut off from charging to the FY10 budget about the, I don't know, say 17th, 18th, 19th of June, somewhere in there. So we would not be like, if it's anything later than the 15th of June, in fact, as a practical matter, because of how long it takes to process a voucher, anything after the 6th or 7th of June would come out of FY11 dollars. So it would have to be applicable from then if you want to save the FY11 budget. Just the way the accounting works. Sorry.
Senator Abdullah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a substitute motion to go back to Representative Krebs's original motion. With the exemptions that she listed, but just the chairs.
Is there a second? Is there a second to that substitute motion?
Second.
Second by Senator Gray. Discussion? Hearing none. All those, Representative Tiedemann.
Thank you. Just a question for the sponsor of both motions. Does that mean that the chair goes to one meeting or goes to three meetings?
Madam Chair, having been inexperienced in this travel, since I've never taken in out-of-state travel, I'm sorry because I don't know enough about this travel business. So I think those that have maybe traveled in this area know these organizations and associations probably could step up and clarify this. I'll be honest with you. I have no idea because I don't know enough about it.
Senator Abdullah.
I, too, have never taken a trip. So I will clarify it. And I'll say one trip. One.
All right. Senator Abdullah says as his motion indicates one trip for the chairperson.
I can work for that.
All right. Any further discussion on that substitute motion? Okay. All those in favor of the substitute motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Chris Abdullah.
Aye.
Ballers.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Miles.
Tyson, Representative Spur.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Krebs.
Putnam.
Aye.
Gray.
No.
Tiedemann.
Yes.
Tribble.
Aye.
And Chair Monroe.
No. Carried. So the policy is for 11 that one person to streamline UCC. All three?
Three people to one meeting.
Three people to one meeting. One to uniform counsel, cold counsel, to one meeting, and no other travel for other legislators. Okay. That's the policy that's out there. So, Mr. Fry, you are going to have to get a memo out to all the members as to what that travel policy is. Representative Turbeville.
Let me throw one more thing at you here. And I recall that we had talked about this in previous years and previous meetings. If an individual who is a chair either chooses not to run or is defeated in a primary or a general election, would they in fact are they in fact eligible to travel to these meetings?
That's already in place.
All right,
policy in place that if you're termed out that you would not are not reelected, then you would not attend.
Thank you.
And I think there's only what one or two meetings at the end of the year in December, NCSL and ALEC.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krebs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think just for direction for Director Fry is just to clarify in the memo to all legislators that if you get your sponsorship, you know, if you get sponsored or somebody else is paying for it, or if you want to, you know, pay for it yourself, you are able to go to these meetings. I think that needs to be further clarified. And then maybe restate who those folks that are been appointed to this streamlined sales tax, as well as the Uniform Commission Code and the chairperson positions. That would be helpful to clarify for everybody in that information.
I'm sitting here with a guilt complex in the sense of, Senator Hansen, that means your group would be excluded. Is that correct in this motion? And there'd be eight of you? That could be a special motion to do that. But again, why has there always been eight? Is there a reason four and four? Do you know the history on that?
No, Madam Chair, Arnie Brown just set it up that way, so it was a bipartisan deal that we set up.
Okay.
It ain't a stretch, is it?
Representative Tiedemann.
Madam Chair, I believe that there's $5,000 in LRC budget and $5,000 in the governor's budget that covers that international experience.
Mr. Frank?
If I might respond, there is a sponsorship fee or a support fee that's paid that would be beyond the travel, and that is correct. There's $5,000 in each of those two budgets, as noted. We would have paid the $5,000, I believe, for the coming year from our budget already. So we've already supported International Legislative Forum for what would be fiscal 2011. And I assume that BFM has or will shortly. So, right, Rachel?
So, for 2011, those eight people will have their expenses paid for?
No, those aren't expenses. Those are the cost of just having that organization. Now, the travel expenses are separate and over and above that.
And once again, you said that we don't operate, you don't prepay. Everything is, for expenses. There's the $10,000 would be the prepay for the membership, and then whatever their expenses were, because the meeting is in June.
And that is correct. And we can't prepay because we don't know what they are. And you can't get them past the auditor's office without doing that. They have to know. They have to have receipts, everything.
Representative Krebs.
Senator Hansen, could you clarify what your end results, the outcomes of your meetings are, and that what you've taken home and brought home with that, from that?
Well, if I might, Madam Chair, I think you've all gotten every year a nice glossy, presentation, which none of the other organizations ever put out. We have some people that come home and write up some presentations, what they've found out at CSG or NCSL, but we've always put out a publication of all the meetings and all the issues that we handle up there. I think that's probably one of the long comings of that meeting, and we deal on issues, usually take about four issues that are local with South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, and Manitoba. So I think it's been real beneficial, and it's nobody ever flies anywhere. We always drive because it's close enough. And it's just your rooms and two nights rooms and gas and mileage there and meals. Oh, I don't think we even include the meals, do we? Because the meals usually are served to us there at the time.
And there's no registration fee.
No registration fee is included. It's just the $5,000 that comes from the LRC and $5,000 from the governor's office. But the presentations of the 10 years we've been there are all documented and I think on file with. You have documentation of all 10 years.
Is there any pleasure of this committee regarding attendance at that meeting? I don't see any at this. Representative Turberville.
All right. So what you're asking for is to exempt. You are asking whether or not we would want to exempt those eight people from the policy that we just established.
It would be to, yes, that there'd be a motion to exempt those people for a one-time. It's a one-time meeting?
Well, I'm looking at this, as was described, the the glossy, very well done. And I'm looking at some of the topics. One of the...
Midwest Legislative Annual Meeting. He's talking about the International Committee meeting.
I knew that.
Senator Abdullah.
I move we exempted that. He got blindsided, and I'll admit that. And I move that we exempt that Green Plan trip.
Okay, it's been moved by Senator Abdullah, second by Representative Berg, that we exempt those individuals and allow them attendance at this meeting. Does your motion include all eight that have been attending?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Any discussion on that motion?
I'd like to see the list. Maybe there's somebody I don't like.
I think there is.
There will be.
There's only one woman, right? And the rest are men? I'm just thinking of sharing rooms and everything. All right. Any further discussion? All right. The motion before you is to exempt that group so they can attend the meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Abdullah.
Aye.
No. Aye.
Aye.
Cronin.
No.
Krebs.
No.
Lucas. Putnam.
Aye.
Rabe.
Aye.
Tiedemann.
Aye.
Turnbull.
No.
Chair Hunham.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. All right. Boy, this is a fun meeting. All right. I think we have covered everything on the agenda. Is there anything else that needs to come before the committee? And again, Mr. Fry, you will send out the information to the legislators.
I will.
And
I'll give you a look at it before it goes.
All right. And I think the other thing, I mean, I keep listening to my colleague over here, and she attends meetings via audio conference, so certainly that should also be pointed out in that the committee members, I know there are several of us on Saturday are attending audio conference, one of our committee meetings, so certainly an opportunity to do that. We have reviewed the new legislator orientation. The Personnel Committee will be addressing that. I do have a question. Will there be new hardware that will come out for the legislators next session, or are we still under the contract?
There will be new, if I might, Madam Chair, there will be an evaluation of new laptops for legislators next year and a determination whether we want to try to make the current laptops go, if indeed that's an option. That is, we still don't, we have at least checked with the lessors. They're not sure whether they have a market for these and have already committed to that, or if we could have the machines for another 2 years. So we will probably be looking at most likely redoing that particular contract and picking up new machines for the next term of legislators. So there will have to be an evaluation by the Technology Committee of what's available out there and go from there. So
that's my question. So are we looking at the subcommittees meeting in June then, at least for updates, what needs to be done or if there's anything on the agendas?
We can go a little later than that because our contract runs through November on the existing laptops, so we have a little more time on that. We do not have to make that decision. Certainly, it would be likely we would have a subcommittee meeting in June to begin the process, but more work will be done probably in August.
All right, so we're looking at the personnel, the computer technology. Is there anything on code commission?
No.
Investment council, that will be also in June.
Yes.
That will meet.
June,
legislative
definitely.
Audit.
Don't know of anything on legislative audit right now.
All right. Supreme Court opinions?
Not yet. Nothing's come down that has affected us.
Legislative interns?
Probably not.
Space planning?
Nothing.
And budget?
Probably. Well, we'll see.
All right. You know, that would be a place that the budget subcommittee would meet, at least looking at what we've devised and what we've got for dollars, what we end up with, and then also for fiscal year 11. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we're summer studying the Bureau of Administration, we could include a lot of that space billing in that, couldn't we, in part of that summer study?
Yes, you could.
You know, that might be one of the focus that we want to put on that.
Sure. Great. All right. So the subcommittees then tentatively for June would be personnel, budget, and computer technology, and investment council. Mm-hmm. All right. So we need to plan for time on that. Anything else to come before this committee? Oh, Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to do anything with the starting times? Are we going to readjust those? You know, because here we're done at 2 o'clock. I don't think our next meeting will be extremely long either, unless we have, I don't know if that's the meeting we have the Investment Council in or not, that if we wanted to start a little later and, you know, go a little longer, and if it accommodates people not having to stay overnight, yeah, it don't matter to me. So.
I'm sorry. What did you say, Representative Tiedemann?
Madam Chair, I think we do interviews of the Investment Council rep the next time, so that will take more time, depending upon how many applicants
people we get. Yeah, it took. I think you were done by about 2:45, 3 o'clock the last time, but I think we started at like 9. So, you know, you can push that a little later, and people can still drive home. You could still start at 10 if you wanted to. Or 10:30 for the meeting, and have the subcommittees meet, say, at 9:30, 9:45.
Why don't we do that? That way it's a one-day meeting, and we don't have to come in overnight.
We start the subcommittees at 9:45?
Sure.
Okay.
Sounds good. All right. Anything else? Okay. Just a minute.
Never mind.
Go ahead, Representative Rave.
No.
All right, Representative Krebs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, you know, we're all kind of laughing about this whole process today about summer studies being eliminated. No travel. I think, and, you know, just let's take this home, though, and recognize that we're doing what our constituents are asking us to do. This isn't, you know, this is a serious topic. This is serious stuff, and I think this is a serious time to be looking at these things and doing responsible and the right thing that our constituents have asked us to look at and do.
Thank you. No, we know what departments are experiencing as we've made some challenging. We are part of that process, and I don't think that when you're looking at your own budget and you're having to make some decisions, just as we do in appropriations, it is a difficult time. So I again thank all of you, and it's been moved by Senator Abdallah, second by Representative Putman to adjourn. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Thank you so very much. Have safe travels, and we'll see you back here in June.
You can't travel, but you can if it's on a Thursday. You're on a subcommittee of seven members.